Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Talk Radio.
Evening, dear listener. This is Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio. Miranda Sawyer's going to join us, I don't know, whenever the football finishes. She was booked for 10, and then we got a message 20 minutes ago. She might be a little bit late. Is she watching the football? Flipping heck. Unbelievable. She's coming here to sell books. Boycott the book. No, don't. It's excellent. We'll talk about it in a bit. 0844-499-1000. I'm Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I don't get about pop music and rock and roll. Oh, thank you. I've got Miranda's book there and it's upside down. There we go. You can see it a little bit better. The thing I don't get about rock and roll, right, is why do they always drop the G off of things? So, like, in the Monkees song, going down. It's not going down, it's going down with the apostrophe. The Beatles, I don't think, are the worst offenders. In fact, I'm struggling to think of a Beatles song where they did that. I know that Paul McCartney's dad, when him and John had written, well, I've heard, at least he's told this story. When him and John had written "She Loves You," they wrote it in Paul McCartney's bedroom, I think, and they went downstairs and they played it. 0844-499-1000. By the way, we call you back. Miranda Sawyer will be here at some point. Is the football finished? If it has, she's on her way. If it hasn't, well, So John and Paul came downstairs and they said to Paul's dad, "We've written this song. It's called, oh, what's it called? It's called She Loves You. Let's hear it, lads." And they played it and it's all the yeah, yeah, yeah. And McCartney's dad said, "Wouldn't it be better if it was yes, yes, yes?" That's such a dad thing to say. And do you know what? He was right. It would have been a lot better if it was She Loves You, yes, yes, yes. Why? Why? Why do they do it? And rock and roll. Okay, I get that, right? Rock and roll. I was interviewing today. Now, if anyone can help me pronounce this gentleman's name, that would be awesome. Felix Cavaliere, I'm going to say. He's the lead singer from the Young Rascals that then became the Rascals. And they're brilliant, right? They're brilliant. But they never had a hit. They had one hit over here. Groovin'. Groovin'. You see? Groovin'. with an apostrophe and no G. That's why they weren't successful over here. We had grammar standards. We'll play that interview out next week. They're like huge hits in the States, but I think two hits, Groovin' and was it A Girl Like You, I think was their other hit over here. Why do bands do that? Prince is the worst offender in every sense of the word. Because he wouldn't even, he invented text speak. In 100 years from now, they won't be playing Prince music, but they'll still, people will actually be talking in text speak. They'll be talking in text speak thanks to Bloomin' Prince. 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number. If you want to give us a call about text speak and Prince and, oh, whatever, you can do. Here's an amazing thing. Oh, hang on a second. Yes, Alan.
Hip, hip, hip.
Hip, 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 Alan.
How are you, Bob?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm tired. Been a long old day. But I am good. Stressful day. Stress. It's been a day full of stress. Hello? He's gone. Okay, well, that was... he just wanted to check how I was. And that's absolutely fine. Let's call him back just to make sure he's not died. We can but hope. I'm joking for crying out loud. It's a joke, for goodness sakes. Ah, dearie, dearie me. 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. We think Alan may actually have died. Which is... which is how these things sometimes work. An amazing thing happened to me today, which I will kind of... I will go into detail in a little bit. Because I think our guest might have arrived. Flipping heck. Outrageous behaviour. Has the football finished then? She can come in. Of course she can come in. And she's going to get a right royal rollicking on air for being unbelievable. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's locked. The joke's on you, Sawyer. The joke's on you. Enjoy the football.
Really?
Hey, it's nice to see you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah,
so, I tell you what I'll do. We'll play some ads and you can get settled and stuff
sure.
like that. So let's have some ads.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Oh, and there's no music. Miranda Sawyer is here.
So I am.
Late. You don't need the headphones if you
no,
want.
No, I don't want the headphones. They make my ears feel a bit hot.
Yeah, and they're very low quality headphones.
Yeah, well, we don't.
Very
we
low quality. Is Miranda's microphone working? Because sometimes the microphones don't work. You need to get quite close to these
okay,
ones.
Okay, I'm there. There
we
go. Better?
Yeah, we're in. Perfect.
All right.
Late because of the football.
Yes, kind of because of the football. And also, well, it was also just one of those parent things where my husband was out and I had to wait till he came in and then I left, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was
normal.
Primarily the football.
But
come
it was
on.
The football.
Don't put it down on a...
Okay. It was the football. I was watching the football, supporting Germany with my 10-year-old son, also supporting Germany. So it was kind of a traumatic evening. I was quite glad to leave.
Yeah.
So
was, I kind he of was left. Properly upset, you were saying.
He was really upset because the penalty was a slightly iffy decision. I know, I realise I'm talking kind of...
I don't know what
you know,
you're...
kind of a weird language to you. And Germany had been pressing earlier. They'd been pressing.
That's... Okay, yes.
They'd been pressing and it looked like they might score.
Yes.
And then the penalty was given and that went France's way. And then basically they scored another one and he started punching cushions and crying. And I thought that was a really bad mumming decision, and that was wrong.
We were saying off it, that's kind of a nice thing. Yeah, all right, he's miserable and he's heartbroken and you've destroyed his dreams.
Yeah, but, you know.
Good to learn at the age of 10.
Yeah.
But also, that's kind of a nice thing, letting your kids stay up and watch.
Yeah, and he's got sports day tomorrow, so he'll be knackered for that. And then so if he, you know, if he runs really badly, then it's fine. He can just say, well, I stayed up and watched the football and that's
fine. It turns out losing is cool anyway.
Yes, that's fine.
Because my favourite team's... Now, listen, we should... Let's address... There's a tiny elephant in the room.
Yes, it is very small. Is it? I see it not.
I'm like a huge fan of yours. I think you're absolutely brilliant. I thought you were brilliant for years, and I love your column as well. And then you wrote about me.
I did.
But you were quite rude about me the first time.
Yeah.
The first time.
Because I misinterpreted. And then you very sweetly said, you duh brain. Well, you didn't. You said it in a really nice way.
I felt terrible.
No, but it's because, you know, I'll give you exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So when I was writing this review, I thought, well, I should review Ian Lee because he's good and did it. And I listened to your show whilst my child was really quite young. Yeah. Like the stage where you look around, you think, where has the baby gone? And it's like stuck underneath the sofa, that kind of time, which is quite a stressful time and not an ideal time to do radio reviewing because your head's full of kind of cotton wool and it's kind of really noisy. So I listened to it and I kind of just didn't listen to it properly. And I thought you were being really rude to someone. Who was it?
It was Tommy Boyd.
Oh my God. So I thought you were being really rude to Tommy Boyd. And so I said, that's just really mean. And of course, you weren't. But that was a joke.
We were doing
a
thing.
You were doing a thing. And I just tuned in and thought, why is that nice man being so rude to that other nice man? I don't understand. And then you very sweetly said, it was a joke. And I listened to it properly and I thought, oh, that is really bad.
But thank you for because I wouldn't normally have written, but I'm such a fan for kind of, you know, not going, oh, sod off, I've written it, you're horrible, go away.
Yeah.
And you reconsidered and I appreciate it. And then I saw you shortly after in the Science Museum and I was with I had my kids and you were, and I couldn't go and say hello.
Yeah, don't blame you. No. I'm really intimidating.
Yeah, you are.
I'm really rude to people.
This is the thing.
Yeah.
Now, the book.
There it is.
You've got a new Yaldi version.
Shall I show you this one?
Oh, yeah, go on. Is there a newer version?
Well, yeah, you've got the brightly neon-coloured pink and green one. And you see, look, much more sober.
Much more serious. Look at that.
Yeah, so that's red and black, which was supposedly, I don't know, well, we changed it anyway, so it's, I suppose, less girly. And then, I'm sorry for this football reference. Oh. I showed it to my son and husband, and they went, "Ooh, Man United!"
Oh,
so which was completely subliminal.
So is that gonna? And there's a you got a picture on the back of yours.
Look at that. Look at that.
There we go. Look,
All wrinkles and everything. See, to prove that I am middle aged.
It's a good book. I loved it. It kind of touches on a few things that we've talked about on the show before about. Just getting to a certain point. Well, midlife crisis is the shorthand for it.
Yeah,
but getting to a certain point in your life where you kind of think, what's this all about then?
Yeah.
And there's not that you. I love the death maths at the beginning.
It's a bit glum, isn't it?
What a miserable but brilliant start. The thing where you start working out how much longer you've got if the wind's blowing in your direction.
Yeah, and I mean, when I kind of started considering that, it was because of kids, actually. So I had my daughter really late. I had her when I was 43, nearly 44, and that's absolutely brilliant. What a privilege to have, you know, a child, and da, da, da. And she's healthy and great, and she was a really good baby. And I just started doing, you know, extending her life out, as you would do, so 18 at least, you know, they've got to be in education. And then, you know, she went to university. I mean, I'd be whacking right into my 60s kind of thing. And I was thinking, A, you know, how will I have the energy? B, how will we afford it?
Yeah.
And also, if you live in London, they never leave kids, do they? What am I going to do? I mean, I'm just going to have to kick them out and go into an old age. Oh, peace home. And I started just working out. Basically, it's an awful thing to say, but basically when you're likely to die and you're counting back and how much life you've got left.
Yeah.
And it's that weird realisation where you know pretty much certain you're over halfway. And what does that mean? You know, because all that thing, you know, there's an element in everybody and it's a completely natural element and there's nothing wrong with it. To think that we've all got potential, you know, we've got potential. And, you know, there's a midlife, there's a point where you think, well, you know, maybe you should have realised some of that potential. You know, you don't have that much potential.
It is. The thing is, as well, it's really common because around about 39, 40, I started getting wobbly.
Yeah.
I've always been quite wobbly, but I was getting like super wobbly and thinking, oh, God, what is this it? What have I?
Yeah, this it is a really classic thing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And I spoke to my doctor about it and I spoke to a couple of friends about it and they all said, it's really common. But it doesn't get talked about. What you don't do in the book is you don't do the jokey midlife crisis. Mm. It's all, you know, the Harley Davidsons and the 16-year-old girlfriends, that kind of thing. You treat it properly because it is a proper thing.
Yeah, because also I was going through it. So if you're going through it, you kind of, you know, do this exactly what you're doing. You're talking to people about it or you try and read some literature. And what happened when it was first kind of defined, the words midlife crisis were invented by this psychotherapist, Canadian one. And it was like the 65, he did it. And it was because he was talking to high-achieving individuals and they were, of course, men, you know. Mm. So it's been a very male skew on it for a really long time. And the classic thing is because you're feeling down in your midlife, you think, I've done it wrong, which is a classic feeling. And you think, OK, I've done it wrong. Now I'm going to cast it aside and do it right. Mm. So you cast aside everything and start doing, you know, buying a sports car and going out with somebody younger. And, you know, that wasn't quite what my midlife crisis felt like. It felt really like I'd done it all wrong, but I didn't want to leave my husband.
Yeah.
And I didn't want a kind of fast car. So then you're left with, well, what do I read? What do I consult? Because everything's just really jokey about it. It's, you know, I'd find books and there were loads and loads of jokey books. And they were all about, ooh, trousers with elasticated waistband.
Yeah.
And stuff that just didn't make sense to me, really.
What you talk about regrets as well and kind of missed opportunities. But there's nothing one can do about that, is there? You just sort of... How do you accept that you've messed up?
Yeah, well, you know,
we all mess up.
Because I suppose that you think everybody messes up.
Yeah.
I mean, you look around at people and you think, oh, they made completely the right decision. Look, their house is amazing and they seem to have done this all right. But, of course, everybody misses opportunities. It's just that you know the ones that you've definitely missed.
Mm.
So, you know, I've had things like really good book deals and I just couldn't deliver the book, you know, and I had to hand the money back. Or I'm not particularly great at recognising opportunities. So somebody would say, oh, why don't you try this? And I thought, oh, that's not for me. And then somebody else would do it and think, oh, that was really great. Why didn't I say yes? And then obviously as you get older, you're not offered quite so many opportunities.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, all these kind of weird principles or fears that you had when you were younger, you know, you have fewer weird principles and fewer fears maybe when you're older. And you can't, but nobody's giving you those opportunities.
In my 20s, kind of my mid-20s, when things, you know, work started happening and stuff, I naively thought, oh, this will always be like this. I will always be earning thousands of pounds. Two of the worst decisions I ever made, right? And they reminded me, I was reminded of them when I read this, was I was asked to host Have I Got News For You? And I turned it down because I was terrified. I thought, they're going to catch me
terrifying.
Out as a fraud.
Yeah.
Of course. And it was, and now, and I think, oh, they'll ask me again. Of course, they never did. And I walked out of, the week before it went on air, it was such a bad decision. I walked out of the last series of the 11 o'clock show because it was awful. And we did a pilot and I said it was awful. And I walked away from a fortune because I was principled. And I thought, this is beneath me. I'm not going to, I don't need to do this. And I look back now and think, yeah, that would have bought me a house and the career opportunities that would have, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah. But you don't realize, because also it is fear. A lot of it's fear, isn't
fear,
it?
Fear, yeah.
I mean, I was asked to go on Have I Got News You one time and said no for exactly the same reason. And never been asked again. I think I still would say no, actually. But those kind of things which are, when you are younger and you have those weird principles which are to do with, you know, ooh, it's a bit tabloidy or, you know, they want to take photographs of me in rubbish clothes, you know, doing things that I wouldn't normally do. They're all just fear because actually it doesn't matter. Nobody cares that much.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. You know, if you're dressed really badly, nobody really cares. But you care and you get really scared that people are going to judge you in that way.
What was, tangent slightly, what was Smash Hits like?
Oh, Smash Hits was brilliant. That's completely great.
you got the job just by blagging it, didn't you?
Well, kind of. I mean, what happened was, so I did a law degree at university. I was really unhappy and I didn't want to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
So I was going to go travelling and because I had no idea what to do. And I saw an advert in the Monday's Media Guardian. I was going to see my mum, so I bought a newspaper, which I never normally did, and they had an advert in there and it said, pop writer for Smash Hits.
Wow.
Rock and roll ain't noise pollution. That's all I read. You know, despite being meant to be studying law, I just read Smash Hits. I was obsessed by it. And so I wrote a letter and, you know, I wrote it by hand in the style of Smash Hits. And then I knew someone who had an Amstrad and I very carefully kind of typed it out. I'm so old. And sent it in. And they interviewed me. And what I think now is it's amazing they actually found the letter because that, you know, the actual office was just a dump. But anyway, they read the letter. And I had the interview and I got the job because during the interview, Barry McElhenney, who was the editor at the time, kept holding up other magazines and going, what do you think of this? And I'd go, I don't read them, I only read some shit. Really tragic. And then he said, OK, well, Elton John's number one. Should we put him on the cover? And I went, no way. You should put Brother Beyond on the cover.
Wow.
And they just put Brother Beyond for the first time on the cover. So I got the job. But the people who were applying at the same time, around that time, for that job, I subsequently discovered, were David Quantick, who is an amazing writer.
Yeah, of course.
Wrote for Veep and is just a fantastic writer. And Jim Moyer, who is Vic Reeves.
Blimey.
And they turned him down because they thought he was a bit mad.
And the thing is, I was guilty at the time of being very sniffy about Smash Hits.
Oh, it was such a great publication.
Well,
you were
this
wrong.
Is the thing. Yeah, I know I was wrong, totally. Looking back on it, it was hilarious and actually
brilliant.
Very naughty and subversive.
And also kind of underlying it was a kind of principle, I suppose, really. And the principle was like, you know, if you wrote for the NME, and the NME was great at the time as well, you had an idea that what you had to do was kind of unpick the music and understand the music and describe the music, Shimmering Shards and stuff.
Yeah.
And then talk to the people who made the music. But in Smash Hits, the music was just taken. We knew the music that we liked and we put up the, you know, we had posters with the words on it, but we didn't have to analyse the music. We just knew the music was great.
Yeah, yeah.
So then that was kind of almost put to the side, and then it was like the people. And if you think, if somebody's a great pop star, and anybody can be a great pop star, Kylie's a great pop star, although she's really dull, and Boy George is a great pop star, although he's really interesting. You know, you lots of different ways of being a brilliant pop star. You just do an interview, and what you wanted to do was show the reader how brilliant or how awful or how hilarious this pop star was. So it was like you were... It wasn't like you were on the pop star side. It's like you're on the reader's side.
Yeah.
And you wanted to, you know, it's like a kind of, they're hilarious, you know. I mean, a friend of mine, Sylvia Patterson, who works at Smash Hits the same time as me, has a really great book out now. And she was at Smash Hits longer than me. And she was really important to Smash Hits. And all the interviews that she did were just amazing. She would go on a roller coaster with the Beastie Boys and discover that Ad-Rock was really scared. Just things like that, you know. I mean, I still remember them, you know.
And that's the beauty of that. I was speaking to Will Storr the other day, because I think it was Loaded he worked at. And it's sad that whole generation of magazines has died now. There isn't the money in it. First of all, there's Huffington Post and stuff, and everybody wants everything for free.
Yeah.
And there isn't the money in, you know, to go off and go on a roller coaster of the Beastie Boys or go to America to hang out with whoever it might be.
No, it's changed. And also the attitude has changed. So what happened towards the end of the 90s and into the 2000s, things became brands. And people became brands. Mm. And then once you've got social media, then you can control your brand through Instagram or Twitter or whatever. And you need journalists less. And people get more and more protected. So it's quite hard to get a decent time with somebody. And you're kind of, people are more suspicious. Even there's a really brilliant bit in Sylvia's book about the Beckhams. And the Beckhams are actually quite good interviews. They used to be, you know, I interviewed the Spice Girls a few times. And you just sit down, they do the interview. That's the job. And Sylvia interviewed David Beckham for The Face, as I remember, and she did a really brilliant interview with him. And now she describes this time when she does an interview and they're launching a perfume, and they just don't speak to anyone. They just, you're just required to be at a dinner. They turn up at a press conference and say, like, you know, something really boring, and that's it.
And that's it.
That's it. There's no interview. There's nothing fun about it. It's just quite sad.
And is that's to protect them? Is
it?
So they're in control of everything.
Yeah, because they've got, you know, loads and loads and loads more PRs around them. I mean, it's interesting. What I find now is that the people who are more interesting to interview, really, are artists. So fine artists have got loads of mad ideas, and they're all really interesting. And they don't have loads and loads of PRs. They might have assistants or someone. But if you're going to interview a fine artist, they say that you find out the time, and then they do the interview. And it's fine. It lasts for an hour, or it lasts for 2 hours, or you go and see their work, or you get, you know, not now, but I used to get drunk with them or whatever.
Yeah.
And it would be a really interesting interview, but that doesn't really happen with pop stars anymore. Mm.
Going back to your book, Out of Time, I tell you what I found really interesting was your honesty about, you're talking about drinking and about kind of drugs and about what a lot of people do in their 20s and 30s. You know, that doesn't seem to get talked about very often, obviously, because, you know, people have got, want to protect reputations or, you know, whatever. But I thought that was just a nice, honest...
Yeah, I think it's possibly easier to talk about it in retrospect. If I was still off my head all the time, I'd probably be less likely to write about it. But also because it was part of the era. So there's a time when I wanted to write about what it was like to be young, you know, in your 20s during the 90s, because that was a time when a lot of alternative culture became mainstream. Mm. So comedy and music, but even fashion like Kate Moss and Irvin Welsh, Trainspotting.
Yeah.
And they suddenly, it all came into the middle and everybody liked it. Like the tabloids loved Britpop, you know, and Kate Moss and the Primrose Hill set and all these kind of things.
Oh, it was a genuinely exciting time.
And you felt like you'd really won. But part of that feeling of kind of winning and going out was that you were out all the time and you were kind of off your head quite a lot of the time. And what's interesting about it is if you were part of that generation, and I don't just mean people in London, that was a massive thing that went right across the country, especially with Oasis, then how does that affect you when you're in your 40s?
Mm.
Because I think the big difference between me and, you know, and a lot of my friends is that the difference between people who've kind of stopped drinking a lot and taking a lot of drugs and the people who've kind of carried on. And I've got no moral problem with it. It's just that it's really hard to spend a lot of time with somebody if they're getting trashed and you're not. So there's a kind of weird divide amongst your friends. The people that you still really love, but they get trashed and you don't get so trashed.
Yeah.
And that's quite a weird divide that I didn't really expect. And also there's kind of evidence that that particular generation and a little bit older, what they call an aging cohort.
Oh, gosh.
I know. There's a problem with drugs and drink. So the amount of people that have taken cocaine who were like in their 40s has really gone up a lot. And a quarter of all admissions to hospital on drink and drugs problems, emergencies, are in their 40s.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that? Is that just because they've carried on, or is it because of money?
Some people have carried on. So it's like a belief in it, you know. So if you think about adverts when we were younger, like think about like Cinzano or Heineken or all, you know, all those kind of adverts, you know, Baby Sham.
Yeah.
Those adverts were like, it was kind of something fun about it, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, very much
so. And it was quite like seductive. And then when you went to, if you then went through rave, then there was a kind of obviously ecstasy involved. And then if you went on to Britpop or Oasis, it was quite, you know, get off. And you know, they talked about, you know, cigarettes and alcohol. That's what it was about. So if that's your method of getting enjoyment, that's quite hard to give up. Because also in the end, you're giving up your youth, aren't you? If you can't handle it, you're giving that up. And then there's a whole lot of people who have done, you know, maybe made more sensible decisions and did do a proper career and then ended up in their 40s with the kind of, you know, family and a great house and a great career and thought, I've missed out. I didn't do that bit that everybody's done. And then I've met a couple of people like that and then they think, OK, what I'll do is I'll, you know, go try ecstasy and or, you know, cocaine. And then they end up with terrible habits. It's just a nightmare.
Do you watch Portlandia? Have you seen Portlandia?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's this sketch show, right? And this couple play all these characters. And there's what the couple of characters they do. They're this very straight, white, middle-class, middle-aged couple. And they get all their friends around. They say, right, guys, we've decided we are going to try drugs for the first time. and they warn everybody. And they take drugs. But then the husband has a sign on that says, if I'm acting strange, it's because I've taken some drugs for the first time. And they go out and they're not being strange at all. They put like a road cone on their head. And, you know, they don't do it. And it's just so brilliantly. There must be people in their 40s and 50s who do think that they've missed out on.
Yeah. And maybe they have.
Being young, whatever that means, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I just think that time particularly was wrapped around quite a lot of drugs. And there is evidence to say that people in their... And there's loads of people who take drugs now and get drunk, of course.
Yeah.
But there's evidence to suggest that a lot of people in their 20s remain more sober than we did.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so it just is a fact that you're more likely to be sober in your 20s than we were, really.
I have to say, we're not, of course, encouraging you to go out and try drugs, kids. You
know? No. I actually genuinely am not, because I kind of think it's great, but there are other ways of getting off your head, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like a shortcut to joy, and actually there's other ways of being joyful.
Oh, yeah, it's not, you know, kind of the spiritual journey. It's joy in a pill.
Yes, exactly. It's just really
like,
quick.
Don't go out and do drugs, kids, just because of two old farts sitting here talking.
No, really don't.
Is it different for women, do you think?
Yeah, definitely.
In what way?
Well, there's different ways. A lot of the books are written by men and for men, for a start. And when they started writing books for women, women were in a different position than they are now. So they weren't working. So there's some great books around in the early 80s, but they assume that women will get married young, have the kids, and don't work or even consider work until the kids have left home. So they're midlife crisis because the kids have left home and they are qualified for nothing other than cleaning the house. And so they're like, what do I do now? And they think they might want to go and get a job. And their husbands literally say, no, you've got to stay home and cook for me. There's a brilliant bloke.
Incredible, yeah.
A brilliant bloke who wrote these midlife books. He's a pastor from America called Jim Conway, and he wrote really quite good books about midlife crisis of men. And then he wrote another one with his wife about the midlife crisis of women. I can't remember her name was Helen, I think. So they write this book, and he's a pastor, so his working time is like Saturdays and Sundays, really, and he has Mondays off. Anyway, he starts having a bad time, midlife crisis, and she's got a job Monday to Friday as a teacher. And basically he just says, so she gave up her job so she could spend time with me and nurse me through my midlife crisis.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what was expected. And they had like courses for women in middle age in New York about midlife crisis, but it was how you should help your husband through midlife crisis. And they were all on Valium, of course. So it's changed because women are now make up half the workforce.
Yeah.
So that is just changed. So you're coping and, you know, I think if you want to work, it's much better. I enjoy working. So if you are coping with work as well as kind of domestic things, and I think that men obviously can cope with domestic things as well. But there's also a difference because women hit their earning power, the top of their peak of their earning power is average age is 34, and for men it's 50. So, and the reason that is caring. So either you're having kids and caring for them or parents. So there's a bit of time in women's lives in the middle when they're quite likely to be caring. And I kind of looked at lots of kind of, you know, rock and roll role models for me, which are people like Viv Albertine and Debbie Harry and Kim Gordon.
Oh, we've had
Kim
Viv on.
Gordon.
Isn't Viv's
She's
book
just
incredible?
Brilliant. Oh, it's the best book ever.
I fell in love with her when I read
but
that
book.
But
there's a bit in the middle where she just doesn't retire, but it's like she's kind of in the countryside caring, you know, and then she comes back.
And
that happens to all, you know, like Kim Gordon, it happened to Debbie Harry, she was looking after an ill partner, Patti Smith. There's a point in a woman's life where you take a step back because you're doing some caring, basically.
Mm.
And so there's a difference to it. And there's also, I mean, not to kind of diss my book, but I think there's a gap in my book, but it's because it's such a big thing I couldn't put it in. And that is, if you're a woman and you want to have kids and you don't have kids, that's when it will hit you as in middle age. Because you become, you hit a point where you can't have kids.
Yeah.
And if you haven't got them, that's kind
of
over.
And, of course, the obvious difference between men is that if you hit middle age, you've not got kids. Well, you can go and get kids somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
exactly. So that's, but that is such a big subject that I thought, I can't just do that in a chapter. You know, hey, never mind, you didn't have kids, so, you know, tough. Then, you know, you can't do that in a chapter. It's too big.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I didn't kind of cover that.
The book, you're writing it as you're going through it.
Yeah.
So it's, and you can hear you admit that you're struggling with some of the ideas and concepts as you're doing it. If you wrote it now, would it be different, wouldn't it? Would it?
Well, yeah, because it's the writing is the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you're having a tough time, there are various ways of getting through it. But one of the ways that I get through it is just to write stuff down, you know.
Yeah.
And then even if it's awful, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I wrote, I just think, oh, God, I can never look at that again. It's appalling. But, you know, just write stuff down. And, you know, if you're a musician, I imagine you go away and write a song or play a guitar or something. I can't do that. I just kind of write a bit. And so that helped. I think it just helps shape what you're thinking, doesn't it?
Mm.
So, you know, talking to people helps, doesn't it? If you've got loads of ideas swirling around your head, if you actually bother to talk to people about it, you kind of work a way through, or they say something, you think, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And that, so the writing of it really helped me. And I also think kind of slightly coming through, you know, I'm coming out of my 40s now, and through researching the book and, you know, getting my way out of it, I kind of feel better, really.
It passes as well, doesn't it?
I imagine for
most people, it is. I was speaking to a psychiatrist about it, and he said it's normal and it's temporary. For most people, it's temporary.
Yeah, because you can't be in a panic for the whole of your life.
Yeah.
Because it's just too...
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe you can.
I can have a good go at it.
Yeah. But, you know, you can't... It's because you can be... I was rigid with panic with it. And you can't actually operate. So you have to do something so that you can operate.
Yeah.
Really.
What are you listening to on the radio at the moment?
Well, lots of things, I suppose. I've got a bit. I'm a bit sick of people talking about politics.
Oh, geez, I know.
I've just switched to kind of, you know, American podcasts where they're all really like, yeah, I get that. That's so interesting. And so I listen to a bit of those because it's just way with the fairies compared
British
to
British radio is so. This is you know, this is what this show is trying to be different to all the other nighttime shows, because it is all immigration and refugees and Jeremy Corbyn and then Lee Gove and all. And it's just, it's everywhere. It's so boring.
It's boring and depressing.
Yeah, yes.
Really depressing. Because also it's one of the things that I kind of feel about the book as well, is that if you're in a situation, if you're, like, say you live in London and the houses cost whatever they cost. They cost ridiculous amounts of money. So I panicked about the fact that we don't have a garden, right? And we're unlikely to get a garden because we're a bit old now and we're freelance. And no one's going to give us 200 grand to get a garden, which is what you need to move into a house in London. And I was panicking about that. And then I just thought, that's not my fault.
Yeah.
You know, the house prices are not my fault, really. I have done nothing to encourage these houses going up like that. And there's certain things that you can't do anything about. And politics generally, I mean, you know, vote. I voted.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't turn out for you. And then if it doesn't turn out for you, there's not that much you can do.
No, there's not. And I voted to stay. And I kind of think we should do what the referendum said.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. I agree.
And then someone had a go at me on Twitter for saying, well, that's a strange attitude to have to a flawed referendum. Well, you know, but all of radio is talking about it, and British radio seems. I'm such a radio geek, which is why I love your column, because it will be stuff that I've heard or stuff that I've never heard. I think, oh, I'll check that out. And British radio is really dull. A lot of it. There are gems hidden around,
yeah.
And there are some real gems hidden around. I mean, Radio 4 at the moment is flying the flag, I think, for doing stuff that's different and is, you know. But speech radio is pretty much dull, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think some people think James O'Brien. He's amazing. But, like, yeah, I think a lot of it is dull. But also, it's kind of soaks everything up really quickly is the problem. So if you have a normal conversation with your friends, there's quite a lot of things you might cover.
Yeah.
You know, but they just, it just bangs through all the topics that are in the papers. And if you have, you know, the Twitter feed or the Facebook feed that I have, I've already read all that stuff. It just does my head in. I have to come off social media because I'm so bored with it. And then you switch on the radio and it's the same stuff.
Yeah.
It's just too much.
I quite like listening to Ferrari as well.
Oh, he's amazing.
He's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah, he's amazing.
And again, people say, well, why would you want to listen to a right-wing old so-and-so?
Because he's good.
Because he's brilliant.
he's really good.
He's a master at it. And it also, I think it's healthy to listen to people that I completely disagree with, you know, because it challenges what I think. Sometimes I change my opinion by hearing someone else's view.
Also he challenges people. So he gets people on, and they might be somebody that he agrees with, or they might be somebody he doesn't, but he just always pushes.
Oh, you know, apart from Boris Johnson. Those interviews were embarrassing.
Yeah, Boris, well...
They were just making love on the radio.
But that's only what's... what's funny about that, like, kind of LBC in general, is they get them all, don't they? Like, they've had Clegg, they've got Gove.
Oh, Farage is doing a show now.
Yeah.
You know, Farage is filling in for Hopkins on there. I know. I mean, it's when Hopkins was covering a late night show, we would play Katie Hopkins bingo. And we'd go, right, what do you think she's talking about now? Let's go and listen to her.
Yeah, just check.
We were generally right. I'm kind of quite late coming to podcasts because there are just so many of them.
Yeah, they're quite hard to get to grips with.
It's like saying, all right, I'm gonna get into rock music. You know, it's just...
But also, the thing about rock music, you kind of do it chronologically. With podcasts, you just have to go, I don't know.
And so I started listening to Adam Buxton's, which is brilliant, just because he asked me to go on there. Richard Herring's I've listened to. And I don't know where else...
Well, it depends what you want, because those ones really are lengthy interviews, aren't they? Lengthy interviews with funny people.
Yeah.
And there are obviously an American version of that that is WTF with Mark Maron.
I keep hearing about this. Yeah, I need to check this out.
There's so many of them that I find them a bit... And also, you need to be a bit of an American comedy geek, which I'm not.
Okay.
I know lots of people are, but I'm less so. But the ones I like are actually not like that. So they're the ones that are a bit like kind of... They're a bit Radio 4-y, I suppose, really. So 99% Invisible will just... The idea of that is obviously that if you look at stuff, most of the stuff you don't is beneath the surface and you don't know about it. And they'll talk about anything. They did a brilliant programme about pool halls, which is like, you know, nothing. And then they just examined how many pool halls there used to be. I mean, there used to be like, you know, more than branches of McDonald's there are now. I mean, just amazing. But all the balls are made out of ivory.
Are they?
So they were then.
They were, okay.
So
wow.
They were made out of ivory. So they were, and you could only, you know, if you had to went over to Africa to get a tusk to make the balls, you could only at the most get three out of a tusk. So they were just
killing elephants
like you wouldn't believe. I mean, appalling.
Well, so, you say appalling. I mean,
just appalling.
It's a fun game. It's better with the original tusk balls.
So they were doing that, and then, you know, they just realised that actually they were going to kill all the elephants and there was no more ivory left. This was not very good. So they kind of put out a competition saying, you know, can somebody come up with a new substance? And that's one of the reasons why plastic was made. I mean, just stuff like that's just amazing.
I love stuff like that.
It's amazing. You would love that show.
What's it called?
It's called 99% Invisible. Right. It's just completely brilliant. You would absolutely love it.
I'm going to have some of that.
And then there's another one called Love and Radio, Plus Radio. And what that is really odd. So it will... What it always does is it takes a story and somebody's talking and you think, yeah, I know this story. It'll be something like, hey, you know, I'm like a sex chat person. And you think, oh, I know these kind of stories. Yeah. And it'll end up, you know, something a bit weird. And it just, at some point, it just always goes off on a tangent. You're like, oh, my God, that's not what I thought was going to happen at all. Yeah, yeah, it's really good. I would recommend
I'm going
that.
Through a massive documentary phase. I'm just buying documentaries. Have you seen The Imposter?
No.
Oh, man, it's this amazing story. We got one of the people from it on next week about this American family and their 14-year-old son goes missing, right, and disappears for 3 years.
Oh, Jesus.
And then, I know, and then this French guy in Spain is a man and a grown man. He pretends to be their son and he meets them and they look at him and go, it's so great to have you back.
No way!
Yeah, yeah. And he lives with them. It is insane. It's insane. It's such a good film. I'm kind of digging those at the moment.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing you would love. All there's a lot of American podcasts like that.
I will check it like out. I will like them. Thank you. You don't do a podcast, do you?
No, I did one ages ago for The Guardian, which was a family podcast. But then they decided, you know, because all newspapers go in a huge hoo-ha about things. So they decided they didn't want podcasts. They wanted video stuff. And then I think they still want video stuff, but maybe not the video stuff that people I know do. Anyway, so I haven't got a podcast.
It's a weird one because hardly anyone, apart from a very few exceptions, have worked it out to monetize podcasts.
Well, it's difficult here, I think, because of BBC. So the BBC, the top podcasts in Britain are things like Desert Island Discs or Mark Mode and Simon Mayer talking about films or those kind of things. So it's quite hard to... Yeah, it's impossible to make money out of it. All you can do is get a sponsor, which people do.
Yeah.
Normally, and all podcasts have the same sponsor. So it's Squarespace. I can just list them all because I've listened to so many. You know, they just have the same kind of... Certain podcasts have certain sponsors. In Britain, it's just... There's not a kind of infrastructure.
Mm.
In America, there's more of an infrastructure.
Is it going to happen, do you think? Or is it that thing of we want everything for free again? We want our journalism for free, our music for free, and our podcasts.
Well, yes, I agree. But generally what happens if it's a good podcast, at a certain point, like kind of say they've got a series of 10 about, you know, 10 episodes, about the fourth episode, they go, would you mind giving a little bit of money?
Okay,
and people will give a bit.
Yeah.
Or the other thing that's quite interesting is that people who build up a big following, they do a tour. It's a bit like being a... do like live tours, you know, and that maybe makes a little bit of money.
And they sell tickets off the back of the podcast and da, la, la, la.
Yeah, so maybe. But you're never going to make much money out of podcasts.
I'm worried that we've made your book sound depressing because it's not. It is in places.
Yeah, it's a bit depressing, but then it cheers up by the end.
I tell you what, I was sat... I think I might have tweeted you this. I was... I had this to read when my mum got very ill and... They basically told me she was dying.
Yeah.
She's not. They fixed her. But I kept the doctors kept saying, "Now, Mr. Lee, what would you need to decide what you'd like if your mum needs to be resuscitated?" And I thought they just asked that as a thing, as a course. You know, I thought, okay, right. Well, I know. Okay, they know the answer to that. Why are they asking me? And then a doctor took me into a room once she'd gone to intensive care, and she was sat there, and I was joking with her. And she said, "I don't think you understand. Your mother's dying." I was like,
"Oh my God,
oh, Jesus!" They fixed her. I got a call that night. They said, "We think we've worked out what it is. Can we operate?" And I went, "Yeah, you go for your life." But I was reading this.
Doing your death maths.
I was doing my death maths. I'm thinking, well, she's got about 3 hours the way this is going. And it was, and I was sat next to her in the hospital and I was trying to take my... And I was reading this and it was one of the heavier
moments.
Points when you're going, what is it all about? What is the point of it?
I'm very sorry.
No, don't. It was, you know...
You should go straight to the ending where there were a few, you know, uplifting bits.
But it is, it's sobering and it's weird. It's weird because we don't talk about it and we do a bit on this show. I always think that we should have... And I don't know how you'd implement it, but like death lessons in school. The kids should be taught.
There are death cafes.
Yeah, and what are people, they?
Well, there's one in East London. I think I might go and have a look. But it's basically somebody who just says you should talk about death a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people did used to talk about death, like in the Victorian times, they were mad on death. You know, they would have like... They would have meals at their loved one's grave. So they would put a little table over the top of their grave and have a little chat while they were eating their picnic. And you can go, there is a cafe in East London, which I discovered after I'd written the book, that you can go along to and they just talk about, you can just talk about death.
And I think it's good because, A, from the practical side, I wouldn't have a clue how to arrange a funeral. I wouldn't have a clue on the practical side of it. But also, it's going to happen. I have my four-year-old on, I'm picking him up from school today and he said, "Daddy, I don't ever want to die." I said, "Oh, okay, well, I've got some bad news. It's going to happen, but it probably won't happen for a long, 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 long time."
Yeah.
And I said, "Why don't you want to die?" He said, "I just like living," which I thought was such
That's exactly it.
But it is that thing that it's gonna happen. And I think it maybe discussing it and what you want to happen when you die and all of this stuff, it might make the midlife crisis a little bit easier.
It does.
To
I mean,
get
I think.
Through.
Well, I think genuinely, yeah, and also the sad truth of midlife is actually you know quite a lot of people that die.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, not obviously this year we've had a kind of plethora of fantastic kind of public figures of dying, but you know people.
Well, your parents will start
to
die.
Yeah, your parents, but also people your age
will
die,
yeah,
and
true.
So you become much more like happy that you've kind of got this far. You know, you feel kind of grateful that you've got through this bit so far. That seems okay. And you can't, I mean, you know, the average age, if you're a, if kind of, you know, around our age, the average age you're going to live really, for a bloke it's 80 and for a woman it's 83. And if you've looked after yourself, it's a bit longer. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's still quite a while. You know, I mean, you might not, you know, you might not be able to reinvent yourself or start a new career or something else, but, you know, you can still go to the seaside a bit.
Everyone's now doing death maths now you've given up. I love that, that bit with Eddie Izzard, I'm going to live forever.
Yeah, he just, he literally says, I'm going to live to 100. And when you talk to Eddie Izzard, because he's so convincing about everything, you go, so you are.
Yeah, you're right,
Eddie. And I've met a lot of, it was all men, actually, who have said, I'm going to live to 100. And I look at them and think, right, you're fantastically intelligent, you're super fit, you know, Eddie Izzard, obviously, but you really might not.
Yeah.
You just might not. And also, I mean, my granny did live. My granny lived till she was 101. And, you know, the end wasn't that great.
No.
You know, I think she would have been slightly happy. She'd have been happy to go at 95, you know.
Oh, Miranda, it's so nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's lovely
the
to
book
see
is
you.
Brilliant. Out of Time. It's Amazon, isn't it? Amazon and everywhere. I don't know.
It's, where the place it's on is Amazon good. Under sports. What was it? They said sports humour. There's not that much sport in it.
I can ask you a question. I really want to ask someone who's written a book, right? Because I'm trying to write a book, but it's hard, right? I've written three chapters, and I think.
Is it about you?
Yes.
Okay, yes, so that's a tough bit.
What are you saying about me?
No, just writing about yourself. It's like what you put in and what you take out.
How many words do you have to put in a book?
Oh, quite a lot. Like 80,000.
Flipping it, man. That's, I mean,
and that's like the minimum.
How many are in this?
90? I don't know. I didn't count.
Did you not?
I got depressed. But my daughter keeps going, ooh, 262, because it's 262, mummy.
Kids love pages.
They really do.
My daughter will go into a bookshop, my 6-year-old will pick up and go, whoa, this has got over 600 pages. It doesn't mean it's any good. It just means that it's big.
And also, I would recommend I didn't do this. Hand it in on time.
Oh, okay.
I crushed quite a few deadlines, and what happens is that, you know, everyone gets in a panic, really. And, you know, I could have had pictures in there if I knew I'd had it. Or an index. Nothing like that. They just took it off me and said, no, we're going to print it now.
You can't do it anymore. It's brilliant. Out of time, Miranda Sawyer. Thank you very much indeed. Let's have some ads.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Well, Miranda Sawyer, Out of Time, it really is a brilliant read. If you've read it, leave nice reviews on Amazon. Someone who now sells wares on Amazon, because I've got this record label, right? And it turns out that it's really important if you get good reviews. It can really help, like, you know, books and CDs and records and stuff. So I've really started leaving review. If I think something's bad, I unless it's, you know, awful and offensively so, I don't really leave bad reviews, but I'll leave good reviews. So if you have, do that out of time, and it is a cracking read. I feel like we're in a time loop. Alan Caddick.
Sorry about earlier, Ian. What? I can explain what happened.
What happened?
My mum yanked the phone line out.
Your mum did what?
She yanked the phone line
out. Yanked? Wowzers. Okay, that's not what I heard the first time.
Yeah, she yanked it out.
Why did she do that, mate?
Because she wanted help going to bed. And I've been told, if I'm going to speak to you, I have to speak to you after 10:30.
She's right, of course.
Yeah.
She's right, of course. You should help Mum into bed.
Yeah. It's probably been something that's been first caller. It's getting to me.
Well, the thing is, Alan, let me relieve you of the burden, right? Being first caller doesn't mean you're the coolest guy.
No.
You'll always be the coolest guy, Alan.
Oh, thank you.
Even if you're the seventh caller.
I don't mind being seven.
Okay. Sixth?
Well, that's okay. Well, seven's okay.
Seven's okay, but not six. Okay, well, that's...
Out of interest, who was the first caller?
It was you.
No, I mean, after me.
We haven't had any callers. We've stopped the show.
Oh, so we need to. We relate back to classic games. I could have got another last one for you.
Say that again, but maybe this time try and say it in English.
You know, Tuesday we talked about classic game shows.
Oh, yeah.
I got another one for you.
This is my job. Yes.
3-2-1.
We mentioned that one, I think.
But, you know, I mean, the clues on 3-2-1 were so obscure, they could mean anything.
Yeah, it was a fix. 3-2-1 was a fix. The clues were so obscure and difficult to work out that if you worked out it was a car, you'd get something rubbish. And if it, but they, you never won anything good. I think people won the car quite a bit, though, actually. It was always a Ford Fiesta.
It depends on what the car was at the time.
Yeah.
Because it was from 1978 to 1988.
Wowzers, that really is 10 years. Ted Rogers, wasn't it? Ted Rogers.
The man with the fastest fingers on telly.
Lucky Mrs. Rogers, huh?
Yeah, and also...
No, it means he could turn the TV over quickly if something came on that she didn't want to watch. I don't know what you're thinking. Yeah.
And also, having a dustbin as a booby prize...
Those dusty bins, you know the dusty bins that you would win...
The ceramic dusty bin.
They now go for £5,000 on eBay.
Blimey!
And you know what happened to the original robot dusty bin?
The robotic dusty, yeah.
Do you know what happened to... There were three throughout the 10-year run, OK?
Yeah.
The very first one, do you know what happened to him?
No.
He became R2-D2.
Blimey!
That is a fact.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened to the second one, but the third one was sold to a game show enthusiast collector in Japan. I remember this because I remember we did this on Three Counties. It was 4 years ago. Let me get this figure right. I think it was over £100,000.
Wow.
Yeah, incredible, incredible money.
The only closest I got to a ceramic dusty bin was a dusty bin money bank.
Oh, yeah, the old dusty bin money banks. 3-2-1.
Yeah, you can see them on sale on eBay for a few quid. Mm. And there's about 30 of them listed.
Yeah. Here we go, this is tonight's phone-in. Classic piggy banks. The greatest piggy bank, of course, was the one that was a coffin. And you put the coin on the top, and then the skeleton hand came out and grabbed it and dragged it back into the coffin.
I remember. Do you remember the NatWest piggies?
The pigs, yeah.
They're classics.
Yeah, they're classics. Absolute classics. Great way of getting children involved in the corrupt world of banking.
And I was tempted to have a NatWest piggy bank, but I went with the Griffin.
The Griffin, of course, voiced by Richard Briers. Come and talk to the listening bank.
Which is now Hotel Sierra Bravo Charlie.
Hotel Sierra. HSBC. Thank you, Alan. Strange way to end that conversation. 0844 499 1000. I'm Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.
OK, so 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number. We'll come up with something. We've only got 2 more hours to fill. We've just filled an hour. We'll come up with something. Oh, I can tell you about the stroke of bad followed by good luck I had. This is Talk Radio. Let's get the news.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
That's enough of that. So, 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number. This is Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio. The late-night phone-in show, unlike any other at the moment, because you bet your bottom dollar they'll be talking about either the leader battle for the Conservatives or the leader battle for the Labour or Chilcot! Take a Chilcot pill, man. Just Chilcot axe. Chillax, that's what I'm trying to do. Chillax. Just Chilcot, man. That's what they'll be talking about. And do you know what? Oh, man, I know it's important, but it's boring. It's really boring. I know it's important. If you call up now, we call you back, by the way. And I'll move the camera angle in a bit so you can get a bit of view of my lovely beard. It's important, but it's boring, and it's everywhere. It's been everywhere yesterday and today, and it will be everywhere again tomorrow. And, you know, it's 2.6 million words. 2.6 million words is twice the size of War and Peace, and it's just the war. So, is anybody just Netflix and Chilcot? That's Catherine Boyle wrote that line. Is anybody actually going to read, like, properly read the Chilcot report? Is anybody? Because I bet if I were Mr. Chilcot, Lord Chilcot, Sir Chilcot, and like page 632, I'd write, 750 quid a pop. I know. I'd write, Tony Blair's bum smells funny. And then, like, on page 2003, I'd write, Alistair Campbell's got a tiny willy. Just to see. You'd have to, wouldn't you? If you're writing something that is that big, right, and has cost that much money, and everybody is making such a fuss about, you would, and someone then challenged you, right, and you go, have you read it? Yeah, I have. What, all of it? Yeah, I have, Lord Chilcot, sir. And I think you're a charlatan. You're telling me you've read all of my report into the Iraq war? Yes, Mr. Chilcot. And I've dropped the Lord because I'm now disrespecting you because you're disrespecting me because you don't think I've read it. Let me just get this straight. You're telling me you've read every single word in my report? Yes. You're a liar. Get out of my office before I kick you out of my office. All right, sunshine? And you come back when you've actually read it. 7 years later, there's a knock at the door. Come in. Now I've read it. What you said about Tony Blair's bum is unfair. And how do you know about Alistair Campbell's willy? And you're a charlatan. Fair play, you've read it. We can have this discussion. And that is how that would go. And that would be fair enough. That would be fair enough. But we're not talking about that. 0844 499 1000 is the phone number. If you call up, you'll get through to Catherine and she will call you back. We're doing a new way of doing the podcast as well, right? This is my idea. And it makes it. What it means is there will be a Miranda Sawyer podcast. That interview will go up and that's brilliant. The podcasts, for reasons you don't need to know, but basically so that everyone can get home at a decent time, were generally taken from the first hour and a half of the show. We're now going to make the podcast basically the last hour of the show, but that does mean they won't get released until tomorrow night's show is on. So do you see what I mean? So now the last hour from Wednesday's show is up. Right, that's up now. It's about to go up. It's about to go up in a few minutes, right? And the last hour from tonight's show will go up tomorrow. And here's the thing, and this is really important, and it proves to me I'm doing the right thing by we're trying it, okay? But it proves to me we're doing the right thing. Because someone messaged me on, what do they call it? Facebook. Said, sorry to be a nuisance. I listen to the show, love the show. I only listen to the first hour. What does straight to air mean and why have you got rid of it? And he had never heard it. He'd never heard the last hour. So we're just trying to see if it works, see if it gets more people involved in the show, see if we get more downloads. By the way, about 500,000 downloads of the podcast. About 500,000. Yeah. When did we start? The end of March. It's about 500,000 downloads. Thanks, guys. Thank you. Let me take some phone calls. We've got these people waiting. Let's go to Matt. Good evening, Matt. Thank you, Emma. Here comes a cup of tea. Perfect. Yes, Matt.
Hello, Ian. How are you?
I'm all the better now because Emma, who is the new Id, because Id got Murdoch'd after we voted out all of the immigrants in the Brexit campaign. An immigrant kicked out the immigrant that was Id. So, and Emma has brought me a cup of tea. So I'm good, thank you. Matt, excellent. How are you doing?
I'm very well indeed, thank you, and I'm delighted to be speaking to you. It's the first time I've called. I've been listening to you for years.
Wowzers. Well, what's made you call in tonight? Because I'm certainly not put anything out.
No, well, you haven't, and actually I haven't been listening until about the last 20 minutes.
Okay.
But my 5-year-old son had a school fair last week, and he said to me that he had a tarantula and a snake and another animal that he held in his hands, and the other animal was like, in his words, like a hedgehog, but smaller and upside down and didn't have any spikes. And I would love to know what your listeners think that animal might have been, because I have not got a clue.
Is it an armadillo?
No, it wasn't. It was tiny. Apparently it was 1 inch to 1.5 inches long. He held it in his palm. He turned his hand upside down and it clung on. And it stayed there. It was like a hedgehog, in his words.
But without spikes.
Without spikes.
Well, that's a messed up description. A hedgehog without spikes. I know that chameleons and other creatures like that can cling to glass because it's not because of suction pads. It kind of is, but it isn't.
It's hairs on their palms.
It's hairs. Yeah. It's the hairs. Yeah. And the hairs fire out a little electrical charge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Static electricity. But this was not that, apparently. And I've questioned him repeatedly on the phone. I don't see him very often, but he has repeated to me that it was like a hedgehog without the spikes, and it was 1.5 inches long.
A vole?
Well, it could be a vole, but I don't know. Voles have the capacity to cling on to people.
Well, let's go through the vole thing. If vole, about 1.5 inches, yeah, that could work.
Yeah.
Looks like a hedgehog without spikes, actually, now I think on it.
A bit.
Well, come on. But you're right, the clinging upside down, I don't know if hedgehogs can actually do that.
I'm not sure that any animal can do that, any mammal can do that. And so I was curious to see if your listeners had any thoughts.
Nothing from this world can do that. Hey, speaking of which, right, you know, we've been talking, I don't know if you've been listening recently, we've been talking about ghosts and electronic voice recordings of ghosts and stuff like that, right? So I have gone online. I've not bought a full set. Right, I've not bought a full set because that would be £70. But I've bought about a third of the... I'm realising this is a really dumb sentence. Of the Unexplained magazine.
Oh, I used to love... what was it used to be called? The magazine with the bearded priest. Christ almighty, what was his name? There was a magazine that... The
14 Times!
14 Times, that was it, yes. Yeah, he was brilliant, and I used to subscribe to that for years, and then I suddenly decided that
It was bullshine.
Yeah, well, not bullshine, but you know.
Well, I'm going the other way. Used to believe in all that stuff when I was a kid, till about the age of 1920. Then it's all nonsense. But now I've just finished reading this again for the second time. Will Storr versus the Supernatural, right?
Which is that's a brilliant book. Absolutely fantastic.
It's a good book. I'm going to show it to the Periscopers because I've just lent it to Catherine and we have Will Storr on, and he's a brilliant guest, and we were talking about mainly about heretics, and I've forgotten how good this book is. Right?
He's the normal person's David Icke.
That is genius. I'm going to email him and tell him I just came up with that. but in this book, and he's a skeptic, right? But in this book, he kind of comes away with he goes in thinking ghosts aren't real. He kind of comes out of it with a question mark over it.
I think ghosts aren't real, but the perception of ghosts depends upon a person's susceptibility to believe things that appear in front of them.
But right, there are creatures, I believe the skate can see X-rays. X-rays can be seen by certain creatures, right?
Almost certainly, yes.
Yeah.
Creatures that live in the deep sea can see things that we can't see.
Yeah. Goldfish can see the light from your remote control on your TV, right?
That's this is. I've read that. Yeah.
This is all fact. Okay. So. Supposing, you know, and there are rays going. This room is full of Wi-Fi and radio waves and electricity fields and all of this stuff, right? And we can't see it, but it's there.
Oh, yeah, everything's there. It's microwaves, X-rays, you know, but, infrared, the whole thing, yeah.
But just supposing, then, that there's X-rays and Wi-Fi and all of this stuff, but there's an old lady sat over there as well that I can't see.
Well, it's possible. It's a bit catic, isn't it?
But it's possible, isn't it? It's possible.
Yeah, everything's possible. Absolutely everything's possible. You can't discount anything until you can scientifically disprove it. Yeah, of course.
Anyway, I just bought loads of The Unexplained. I got them for a steal. To buy the whole set would have cost me 60. The thing is, I'll enjoy this third of a set so much that I'll then go and buy the whole set properly. And
I have to ask, actually, I do hear you talk repeatedly about how you've got albums and DVD box sets and things for an absolute steal, and I would like it very much if you could share with your population.
Mate.
How you get these things.
Wicked. I've just got wicked internet skills. I've just got skills. And wicked skills. But the thing is, I buy all this stuff and then I never use it. Now, going by my previous recent forays into buying magazines, right, I will read the first two and then they will stay under my bed for 6 months and then they'll get tidied up and put in the bottom of the wardrobe. That happened with a run of 15 years' worth of Beach Boys fanzines that I bought. And I bought loads of magazines about fanzines about a guy called Arthur Lee in Love. I bought 10 years' worth, read the first two. They're in a shoebox under the bed. So the same thing will happen here, but it only cost me 12 quid. So that is a bargain. Matt, we'll see if anybody can describe that creature. Oh, you've just reminded me, right? My four-year-old's last day at nursery today, end of term. And I went to pick him up. I had to go and pick him up. And his teacher came out and she handed out like things that they made throughout the year. And she said, Ian, your little boy brought a slug with him to school today. We've checked. It's fine. And you'll be taking the slug home with you. And I went, oh, brilliant. Thanks. And for some reason, he's got a little Tupperware pot and a slug. And I said, why did you bring a slug? He said, I found it indoors. He's right. There was a slug indoors. It was by the dog food. And I saw it the other night. And I thought, nah, I'm not getting involved in that. I walked away. We've got stick insects all over the house as well. They escaped the stick. Anyway, so then we've got this slug in this plastic tub. And I said, it's the last day of term. As a special treat, why don't we go to Yo Sushi, right? It's his favourite place. It's expensive, but it's the last day of term. Let's go to Yo Sushi. So he did. And he wanted to bring the slug with him to Yo Sushi. And I said, man, no, the slug, just leave the tub in the car, right? We went off, we went and had a lunch, we looked at some bits and pieces. We came back to the car. He grabbed the tub, sat in his seat, and I put his seat button in, and he went, oh, that's strange. The slug isn't in here anymore.
Where was he?
Somewhere in my car, Matt. I've got no idea.
He'll be there somewhere, he'll be on the roof.
I said, that's not funny, mate. Now, we're going to find this slug. And, of course, we couldn't find it. So somewhere in my car, there's a slug going around.
Yeah. He'll be there somewhere. You'll see a trail up the back windscreen, and then he'll drop off the roof onto your head while you're driving up the motorway.
Don't. Why would you do that? You're like one of those internet trolls, you are. What a horrible thing to say to someone. You terrified me. Matt, we'll try and find out what that creature is. Thanks for calling.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time. My Twitter handle is CharmlessNerk. If anyone wants to try and follow me on there, it'd be lovely.
Oh, well, you've tweeted me from time to time, haven't
you? Yeah, many times. Beautiful. I absolutely love you. You're a brilliant guy. And so many thanks and good luck with the future.
Would it be a dream come true for you if I cut you off?
It would be.
There we go. 0844 499 1000. Rashid, Tris, stay there. Come to you after this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
0844 499 1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. You will speak to Emma and she will call you back. And that's how it works. Remember, no straight to air after midnight anymore. We knocked that one on their head for a while. And I'm glad we did. It's absolutely the right decision. Rashid! Oh. Oh.
Hello?
Yeah, hello, Rashid. What's going on?
Just doing my bit of work while I was waiting to go on the phone.
What's your bit of work? Playing Candy Crush or something?
No, that was... I just work on the checkout at Asda. Now I'm doing scanning the barcodes for the work.
Everybody asking on Twitter, no, the money launderer didn't get back to us. That's a shame. That's a real shame, because I could really do with that cash. I have never played Candy Crush.
Okay. Yeah. Nor have I. I always refuse the requests.
Yeah, I never... Oh, do you remember? They don't do it now, but on Facebook. You used to get... You've been invited to play Zootropolis. You've been invited to play The Mafia. All the time on Facebook, it was always inviting me to play crappy little games.
I know. Get alive, will ya, Facebook people?
Well, fair play. And can you still get can you still get poked on Facebook? I don't think you can poke anyone.
I haven't been poked for a while.
You and me both, eh, Rashid? Maybe we could poke each other. No.
Oh, I got a bigger beard than you. I got a bigger beard. That's like one of the things I want to say. Because what it is, you come on and you want to say things, but you forget. Because, I don't know, the adrenaline, and you forget what you got to say.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of them.
One of them is to phone up and literally rub my face in it.
Yeah, beard envy. Wow. I went to the barbers and I said, like, can you just trim the sides down a bit? Yeah, trim the sides down. He goes, it was a Muslim barber. He goes, I know what style you want, brother. You want Bin Laden style.
Oh, dear.
I said, yeah, it does look a bit like that, but I don't want to be associated with Bin Laden. You know what I mean?
Well, he did have a good beard, though.
Yeah.
Hitler did a lot of bad. I mean, did a lot of bad. But the moustache, the Hitler moustache, has never made a comeback.
Well, hang on a minute, though. Muslims and Sikhs, they've been rocking beards for years.
Yeah, but hang on a minute, Rashid.
Go on.
There were people who had the Hitler moustache way before Hitler. Why is it not called the Oliver Hardy moustache or the Charlie Chaplin? Why is it not called a Charlie Chaplin moustache? I mean, he wasn't funny. Oliver Hardy was. But if I were to shave off my facial hair and just leave an Oliver Hardy... I'd be in all kinds of trouble.
You can't rock at Oliver Hardy, though. You can't. You know what I mean?
I could do it.
Hang on a minute.
I'm doing it for the periscopers. There we go. There's an Oliver Hardy. Well, I think I can do it.
Why don't you go for the Abe Lincoln, the Abraham Lincoln look, you know, just shave the moustache clean and leave the sides and the...
Well, the Amish people have that. And I have a friend who can grow a full, thick beard. He cannot grow a moustache.
Mm.
Yeah, it's true. He can't do it. He only went bald at the age of 19.
It's a shame.
But let's just say he's doing all right in other areas, so I'm told.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to say was it's the animal what your caller just called in, what it is. It might be a haggis.
Yeah, it could be a haggis. Haggis.
Did you ever get the drawing of the haggis from...
Yeah, I did. I tweeted it. It was a brilliant picture.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Could be a haggis.
It's weird that the thing is, right, there are so many... Here's the amazing thing, right? There are still thousands of creatures on this planet that we've never seen.
Yeah.
We've never seen, particularly under the sea. Under the sea, right, get deep down in the deepest, darkest parts of the sea where it's just rotting flesh and bones, there are creatures that we will never, ever see.
Yeah. You've seen them submarines that go down and they shine. The irony is they're in pitch black, but when the light shines on, they're like multicolored.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. What was the other thing? Oh, yeah. I'm halfway through the imposter.
Yeah.
I'm halfway through.
This is the homework, guys, for the film ring. Next Monday, we're talking about the imposter. It's on YouTube for free. And we've got... have you got to Charlie Parker, the private investigator, yet?
Yeah, I just stopped it there.
Brilliant. He's coming on. He's coming on Monday, so we're having some of that. And there are five tickets... left.
Like Rascal Pico train from Jason.
He is like that, isn't he? There are five tickets left for standing tickets for They Killed My Cat and more. We've got a very special guest coming up on August the 21st. Ticketsource.co.uk/ Ian-Lee, I-A-I-N-L-E-E. There are five tickets left. There are only a fiver. They're standing. But it's above a boozer as well, so you can always go downstairs and we can get drunk. I won't because I don't drink, but you can. Don't get leery. Anything else, Rashid?
Yeah, I wanted to make a suggestion for the film. What's it called again? And erase his name. What's his name? What did he call it?
If you can't name it, then you can't suggest it.
It's the adrenaline in it. It's the adrenaline.
If you can't name it, Rashid, then you cannot name it. Let me give you... hang on a second. Let's give you a little bit of thinking time. There we go.
Film club. Have you got a countdown clock?
Film club. No, I know. My music's not working. You could be lucky here. The music isn't working, so you could be lucky.
Film club. Count me down. 15 seconds or film club.
Oh, I can't find me.
Film end.
Film end? What the hell?
What was it? My mind's gone black. This happens to me lately. I'm getting older and it's a midlife crisis. 46.
Well you've 46. I'm afraid you've
passed
you.
Do you know when the midlife crisis...
Is the music?
All right. Film club.
If you don't get it right, you're going to get cut off.
Film end, film racist, film... film... Film link. Oh, God, this is horrible, man. Oh, it's in my head. Film... Give us a clue. Come on, can I phone a friend? Give us a clue.
You might slip one on a beloved's finger.
Film ring.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rashid, what is your suggestion for it?
Ian, it was on TLC some years ago. I watched it. But every now and again, it's such a documentary that it sticks in my head. And it's called The Boy Whose Skin Fell Off.
I'm flipping out. It don't sound like a lot.
No, Ian, if you can Google,
What's it about?
If you put TLC in Google, right, and you put TLC, The Boy Whose Skin Fell Off, The Boy Whose Skin Fell Off, and if you go down to the VMO clip, it's a 30-second clip.
Yes.
I guarantee if you watch that 30-second clip, you're hooked. You've got to watch
it. We'll see. Tris, stay there. I'll come to you after this.
The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
08444991000. We call you back. Tris is on the line. Good evening, Tris.
Hip, hip, hip. How are you, my friend? Doing well?
I'm all right. I'm tired. I'm filming tomorrow. I'm filming Sam Delaney's programme tomorrow. He does a programme on Russia Today. And I'm filming that tomorrow morning with Karen Danchuk. And her bosoms are going to be there as well, I think.
I don't know who that is. So.
Oh, she's the self-proclaimed selfie queen.
All right.
I'm sure she's delightful.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing. She's the selfie queen. Yeah. And I'm tempted to get a selfie with her.
Yeah, well, go for it. I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, no, there is literally an answer to it. But how am I? I'm all right. You know, I'm all right. Comes and goes. What you got for us, Tris?
That's life, baby. Well, you suck me in with Hey Bulldog, so...
You're good, isn't it?
Really, it's such an underrated track.
Yeah, it doesn't... It never gets played. And, another Beatles song that never gets played that is stunning... is The Inner Light.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's that, the B-side to?
It's not Let It Be, because that's You Know My Name, Look Up My Number.
Yeah.
Another great one that no one knows is Old Brown Shoe.
Oh, mate.
I love that song.
Old Brown Shoe.
I played that at the last place I worked, and people going, what's this song? It's great. It's the blooming Beatles, and no one knows it. I'm stepping out with this Old Brown Shoe, baby. I'm in love with you. It's a great song.
The first take of that, which I think is on Anthology 3, probably. Brilliant. Just piano.
Yeah.
Piano. Oh, mate.
By the way, I'm getting very... If you hear me being distracted, it's because people are starting to receive their box set of Monkees Blu-rays. $200. And people are starting to receive them. And I'm just looking at them in envy, drooling, because I can't wait
to... Do you watch those unboxing videos online?
Yeah.
I've been watching that.
It looks absolutely bloody amazing.
I'm not really into the Monkees. I love Head. I thought Head was a good album. What's the album after Head?
Is it Birds? No, Birds and Bees comes before Head. It was Peter left then. It was Instant Replay.
That's right, yeah, it's a good album, that Instant Replay.
Solid album. It's made up of outtakes from the 2 years before.
Yeah, no, I like those two albums a lot, but the early stuff I've never really got into.
I know what you mean,
Yeah, it's a bit niche, isn't it? I think.
Well, I don't know if it's niche, but I think for today.
Well, I think if you weren't.
Well, you know.
I was wondering, do you know a band called The Shags?
Oh, mate, do you know who I'm talking? Who I'm talking to? Do I know who you're talking to?
Yes. Yeah. So you do know The Shags, yeah?
Of course, I know the Shags.
I've been listening to them recently.
Well, I don't know how you can. The last place I worked, right? There used to be this fella on before. So I used to do a breakfast show at BBC Local Radio, right?
Yep.
And so I would start. The show was 6 till 9, and before us was a guy that was played across the region called Wally Webb. Oh, right. I'm Wally Webb, and today, oh, look, and he was like that. He was the genuine inspiration for Alan Partridge, right?
Okay.
He is who Alan Partridge was based on, and he would do a very straight. People loved it. It wasn't my cup of tea. I found it a bit poor, but people loved it, right? And he would do a very straight kind of show. And would play, you know, the Eagles, Hotel California, and I don't know, all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And one morning, I was feeling very naughty. I got told off for doing this. I used to keep firing off little things during his show because I could broadcast over him if I wanted to, right? And I would sometimes pretend I was in the studio with him having a conversation. Right? I had to stop because this woman called Jen of Houghton Regis complained loads of times. Right.
But it all ended well.
It ended really well. Yeah. So one morning, right, so I got in the studio early and I got my CDs out. And Wally Webb goes, right, well, now coming up, it's the last song for me. And this is the Eagles and Hotel California. He pressed play. I turned off his output and I pressed play on my CD player. And this came out. As you can imagine, the listeners to BBC Local Radio were not very happy to have the Eagles replaced by the Shags.
What's that philosophy of the world?
Yeah, he knows it! and John, you know, John Ronson interviewed them recently.
Oh, did he?
I'll have a little. That's my project tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to try and find the Shags. Send me a text, Kath, to remind me to Google Shags. Steady. Because they're still alive. And their dad made music. Well, their dad wanted them to be like big rock stars, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Well, they were pulled out of school, I think, at like the age of like 8 or 10 or something. And he'd go off to work and he just made sure they'd rehearse all day, every day.
But they weren't. Am I right? They weren't allowed to listen to music.
Yeah, absolutely. It's music without influence. That's what's so interesting about it. It's they have got no. At the time, they had no awareness of popular music or anything like that. They were just forced to play these instruments for years until he decided one day that they were ready, and then they put out that album you were just playing there. And it's really sad. Really sad story, but fascinating just to think that this is what music is in someone's head. You know, they understand that there's this thing to get out, and that's what they got out.
I just found there's a tribute album to the Shags where people doing covers of Shag songs. Listen, let's listen to... This is the same song covered by someone called Ida. Hang on. Anytime tonight, Ida, anytime. This is either brilliant or awful, I can't tell. Hang on a minute. Hang on, I've got it. Oh, trust me to pick the instrumental. Here we go. Nah, it's awful. So, won't be listening to any more of that. Tris, anything else?
No, not really. Well, kids and death. My kids are obsessed with death at the minute. My two girls.
Yeah.
I was picking my eldest up from school about 6 months ago or whatever, and she was telling me this story about a teacher, and she said, "Oh, my teacher, her mummy and daddy died, and then she got another mummy and daddy, and they died as well." Daddy, what's died? And we had this really difficult conversation driving up, trying to sort of explain what death was and everything like that. And since then, she sort of checked for me once a week whether or not I'm dead or whether or not she's dead. I don't think it's sunk in at all. But they've put it into their heads, my two girls, that when a bird comes out and pecks your eyes out, that's when you're dead.
Oh, well, you hope you were at that point.
Well, that's where we've left it.
The boys kind of, it comes and goes. They were fascinated with it for a bit, and they wanted to see dead things when our rabbit died. Can we see it? Well, no, it's gone now. Oh, can you show me a picture of it? Can we go and see something dead? They wanted to see something dead because it's so not... Well, they have no concept of it, really. They have a very limited concept of it because they don't know, you know, to children, everything is infinite and will always be there, you know, and long may it stay that way before they...
But, I mean, sadly, death belongs to all of us, doesn't it? It's one of those things that...
Tris, does death belong to us or do we belong to death? That was good. Tris, thank you very much, mate. 0844 499 1000.
The wild man of late night radio is back.
Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Someone's just messaged me. Well done. We're tracking down the shags. 0844 499 1000. Gosh, I've just suddenly been hit by exhaustion and a bit of a headache. Someone's just messaged me. Asking on Facebook, asking if they could call in and talk about something. And give them the phone number. Bit tied up tonight. How about Monday? Yeah, this is, and I've had a couple of people messaging me about this. Is it right if I call in and talk about this, or can I talk? Yeah. Talk about anything you want, guys. Honestly. And I don't know. It must be my, what the Americans say, it must be my bad that I'm not getting this message across well enough, right? That this is unlike any other phone-in show where... And Miranda, when she was in, kind of touched upon this. That a lot of shows, they kind of hammer a news story and it's not a conversation that flows. By the way, we have no calls lined up now, which no one else would ever say on a phone-in show either. So now would be an excellent time to call in if you want. If you don't want, I'll sit here and chat. I've got plenty to talk about tonight. 0844 499 1000. We call you back. So I need to find a better way of getting this message across more. This is, honestly, and this isn't me going, hey, man, it's unlike anything you've ever heard before. You probably have heard this before. If you ever listened to Danny Baker or Tommy Boyd or Clive Bull back in the day, you know, or me back in the day, of course you'll have heard it before. Jeremy Beadle, even, to a certain extent, you know, loads of people. This is not anything original, but it's certainly different compared to the landscape of what is out there now, right? And you can literally call in about anything you want. Anything you want. And I know I say, no, talk about Brexit and la, 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 la. If you call in about it, we'll talk about it. I mean, I would rather not, because I find it a little bit dull. Sometimes I get a bit excited about it. But if you call in about it, we'll see how the conversation goes. We'll see if we can go anywhere and see if we can go anywhere different with it that all of the other radio stations and radio presenters haven't been to. And here's the thing. If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. You learn from your mistakes. Only failures succeed. I made that one up, I think. I love that. Only failures succeed, yeah, because they fail. You've got to be brave enough to fail. So me and Kath, we're doing brilliantly. honestly, you can phone in about anything. I will sit here and talk about stuff. You don't have to phone in about the stuff that I'm talking about, although you are, of course, you're welcome to, right? You can phone up just because you're feeling a bit lonely, because you're not very well, because, you know, you had a great day at work, because you had a baby. You phone about anything. You can phone in to say you don't like the show and this is how you think the show should go. Honestly, I don't mind. I don't mind. I want it to be organic and I want it to be a conversation. This is why I'm really trying to avoid coming in with like three questions or five funny things. And we've done it a little bit with the celebrities fighting and the game show final rounds. And if those things come up spontaneously, like they did on Twitter, then we'll do it. But I'm really resisting the urge, and it's hard because I am a coward and I'm a man of habit. But I'm really resisting the urge to come in with like five, like what Danny Baker does, where he'll fire off, before his show on a Saturday, 10 topics on Twitter. Every one of them brilliant. And I'm really trying to avoid doing that. And I'm just trying to do something a little bit different with that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. And you know, sometimes you have conversations with your friends and they're not very interesting. And that's all right. Doesn't mean you're never going to speak to them again. And sometimes you have conversations with them where you start talking about one thing and you end up somewhere completely different. And now we have got loads of calls and I should shut up. But cannot stress this enough. And maybe I need to mention it more throughout the show because some of you only listen for chunks, little bits. You can literally call up about anything. Whenever I get a new producer, and we had a new producer last week, Dave, the thing I always tell any new producer is, just put them through. Put them through. And if you, on any other show, you would reject someone who calls in, put them to the front of the queue. You know, literally anyone. And you've heard we've had people like Jerry, who's got Parkinson's. Sometimes you can understand him, sometimes you can't understand him very clearly, but we get there in the end. We had that lad last night whose name escapes me, who struggled with Paul. It was hard work to understand him, but we got there in the end for most of it. I got about 80% of it, 75%. So anyone can call in about anything. You dig? You dig? Periscopers, are you digging? Good. 0844 499 1000. Matt's on the line. Evening, Matt.
Hi, it's me again. Sorry, I've already called once this evening, and I really, really hate to risk being a bore. But I just wanted to say that...
did we find out what the animal was yet?
We didn't. I haven't heard any response at all. No. But I'm assuming no one will know, because my son is probably slightly mental and may not know what he's talking about.
Yeah,
I want to say that I've listened to you for years, and I absolutely think you guys are brilliant, and I hope you continue to do what you do for years to come.
But?
Beyond that,
That sounded like a but.
Go on.
No, that's what I thought you were going to say. It was so enthused. I thought you were going to say, I hope you keep continuing it for years. But you're a bit rubbish.
But. No, but no, God, this is the thing with you, Ian, is that you, I think, are like me in that you have this propensity to expect negative comment when you've actually done nothing wrong at all. You and Kath are a marvellous partnership, and you need to do what you do on whatever platform you do it on for ever and ever. Amen. Because I think you guys just have a way of doing talk radio that no one else I've ever heard can do.
Well, thank you very much indeed. I get paid for this. Can you believe it? I get paid to have literally the best job in the world. It's amazing.
You are a lucky, lucky man.
Very lucky.
I just wanted just to sort of, while I've got the attention of you and your listeners and the Periscopers and everybody else, just to sort of raise the issue of mental health and depression.
Yeah.
You have done such a great job of just kind of raising the issue of depression and dealing with mental health and carrying on and maintaining a positive mental outlook.
Yeah.
For me, it has been. I can't begin to describe. I don't have the vocabulary to describe how vital it's been to me to hear you battling through the way you've dealt with your issues, and seeing you on radio, hearing you on radio, and seeing the way you deal with the issues on Twitter, just pushing through and handling the mental issues that so many of us have to handle. It's just been an absolute inspiration to me, and I really wanted to say thank you to you and to Kath and to everybody else that's been involved in producing your output. It's been vitally important to me. I'm sure it's been essential to others to hear how someone can push through and handle issues that arise for so many people, and just deal with it. And I'm waffling now, but I just want to say thank you.
And I'm being deliberately quiet because I am learning to sit and listen when people say nice things, and I shall reply by saying thank you very much.
And your ability to listen is one of the things that strikes me as so special about you, is that you can just not interrupt. And actually, when I hear people interrupt you when you're trying to get your point across, is one of the things that makes you so special. So anyway, I'm going to go away now.
Go away. Thank go you on, much. You silly sausage. Thank you, Matt.
I'm buggering off. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ta-ta. Bye-bye. There we go. Johnny.
Hello.
Hello, Johnny.
Hip, hip, hip.
Hip, 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 Johnny.
How's it going, Ian?
It's all right now. Who sang that? Free. Who were Free? Free was the guy that then went on. He then replaced Freddie Mercury, didn't he, in Queen?
Yeah, I'm sorry. My music knowledge doesn't match yours, I'm afraid.
I've just mentioned two crap bands. So, yeah, I'm going to say it. Queen of crap.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
How's it going tonight, anyways?
What, the show?
Just in general.
You know, it's going all right. I wouldn't say it was one of the best shows. We had Miranda Sawyer was great. The first hour was great. It's your average show tonight, which is good for me.
Good stuff. I've just got in tonight, so I've missed a good chunk of the show. But I heard you screaming for callers, so I thought I'd phone in.
Chaz from Chaz and Dave has just retweeted a retweet that I retweeted.
Oh.
It's Mickey Dolenz tweeting a picture of him and Ringo Starr and Graham Nash saying happy birthday to my good friend. Oh, it's Ringo's birthday! Oh!
That's what Twitter's all about, isn't it?
Oh, it's Ringo's birthday! Hang on a minute. We had a request. Someone asked for a request for Ringo's birthday. You don't mind if I play this, if I play a request for Ringo's birthday, do you?
Go for it, Ian.
Stay there. I can't remember who this was, but someone said someone genuinely did. It's Ringo's birthday. Can we play this? With great pleasure.
This is a serious message to everybody watching my update right now. Peace and love. Peace and love. I want to tell you, please, after the 20th of October, do not send fan mail to any address that you have. Nothing will be signed after the 20th of October. If that has a date on the envelope, it's going to be tossed. I'm warning you with peace and love, but I have too much to do. So no more fan mail. Thank you, thank you. And no objects to be signed. Nothing. Anyway, peace and love, peace and love.
And that was for someone who requested that to be played as a tribute to Ringo Starr's birthday piece.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that for ages. I forgot he gets quite arsy about it. I then interviewed him a couple of years after that, and I took the White Album to be signed. Wouldn't the White Album look great with his signature on? And he refused to sign it, so fair play to him. Fair play to him.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Ringo. I love Ringo. I think he's brilliant.
Happy birthday, Ringo.
How do you do a Ringo Starr impression? I can do Paul.
Peace and love. That's all you need to do.
Peace and love. Peace You're and doing love. It.
Peace and love.
Peace and love. Peace and love. I'm a Ringo Starr. It will be tossed. It will be tossed. Peace and love. I will toss it. Oh, no, I will toss it. Oh, no, don't want him saying that, do you? Blimey.
Yeah, so I came in I came in from the pub to say, and yes. I've turned on question time, and George Galloway's not wearing his hat. What's that about?
WTF?
Yeah.
Gorgeous George ain't wearing no hat. What the hell is going on?
He's obviously just realised it's not a good thing to wear.
Here's the thing, right? There are so many rock stars who, at a certain point in their careers, started wearing hats. Two of my favourite rock stars, Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees and Mike Love from the Beach Boys, started wearing hats. Yeah, guys, we know what's under there, and it ain't hair. We know that. We know you're bald, okay? Enough with the hats. Let's just see your bald heads. And I've seen pictures of Mike Love without his hat on, and it is weird. But just don't wear a hat. You're bald. It don't matter. Don't matter, does it, Johnny?
I think George is getting comfortable with the fact because he wasn't wearing it on question time.
Well, good for him. Maybe they have a no hats policy on BBC Q2. How is he doing on there? Is he doing well?
Well, it's finished now, but from what I have seen, he wasn't wearing a hat, so he's doing all right.
The last time I saw question time was when I saw the highlights when Nick Griffin was on there.
Oh, no, you don't watch it when he's on.
Well, no, it was funny, that one. But I don't think I've ever watched a whole episode of Question Time. Now, I like listening to the other Dimbleby hosting Any Questions, which is the Radio 4 version of Question Time. I like that. That's my little treat. If I have a lie-in on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, I'll listen to that in bed on the iPlayer. It's my little treat. But right. I've never watched Question Time.
Yeah, you're not missing much, to be fair. It's just a lot of politicians not knowing what's going on.
Part of me thinks, right, genuinely thinks, it's not worth being interested in politics, OK, because it will all happen anyway, right? And me watching Question Time, me knowing what's going on in the world of politics, isn't going to stop it happening or change it. So I might as well just let them get on with it.
Peace and love.
Peace and love, Johnny. Please, and can I just say, please don't send me any more items because I will just toss them. OK, I'm going to toss them. Meat-free Mondays. You can do it right now, please. Dan, stay there. We'll come to you after the news. No straight to air. 0844 499 1000. Now is an excellent time to give us a call while the break is on. It's the last hour of the show. Thursday is turning into Friday. Oh, yeah. That means the weekend. Yay.
Talk Radio.
Last hour of the show coming up. I don't really have anything to say in the build-up to the news, so I won't.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Silly messages and pictures, directing traffic in the mall, or buzzing with some brand new shoes. She never fails to surprise.
Whoa, guys, what happened to smile. What happened there? Was that me or you? Was that what happened there? It don't matter, we you get the idea. Simon, yes, Simon.
Hi, Ian.
Hey, Simon, what you got for us?
Oh, I've had one of those days again today.
Well, what's happened?
Well, I moved the last of my stuff yesterday.
Yes.
So I hired a van.
Is this up to Liverpool?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Right. So you've separated from someone? I don't want to rub it in. Just a little
right,
reminder.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have moved up to Liverpool for work. And how's it going?
Well, I'm going to get a documentary crew to follow me around, I've decided.
Oh.
It's just, well, hired a van yesterday.
Yeah.
Brought all my stuff up. Left the van overnight outside. Thought nothing of it. Went and put some rubbish in it this morning when I woke up, and there was someone in it asleep in the back of the van.
Really?
Yep.
Flipping heck. That must have been terrifying.
I didn't know what to do. I didn't know whether to shut the door because he was asleep.
Ew.
I didn't know whether to shut the door or call the police or what.
I would kind of woken him up and said, mate, can you get out of here, please?
Well, I kind of, like, coughed and stuff, and he woke up. And he kind of gave me a bit of attitude.
Oh.
Because I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, you left it unlocked.
Yeah, fair play. He's got you there, mate. You left it unlocked.
So he went off, and then 5 minutes later, he rang the doorbell, asked me if he could use a shower.
What?
Like, I was just like, one of the moments where, like, I was watching the TV or something, and it was on TV. Like, yeah. This was happening. It was unbelievable.
Did you let him use the shower?
No!
Okay, well, I don't know. So the Muppets that we get calling me, I wouldn't be surprised.
So I thought, right, I kind of forgot about it, took the van back, had to hand the keys over. They went out and checked the van, and they come back, and they said...
No, they didn't.
He'd left me a present.
Oh, I was going to say, he didn't, did he?
He'd left me a present.
Did he leave you a toilet, did he?
So, but obviously they would... I had to explain to them what happened, and then they charged me.
How much does it cost to have a dump in a van these days?
They kept the deposit, so it cost me £260.
They kept it? Oh, yeah. You mean the financial deposit? I'm sorry, I thought you meant the fecal one. Okay, how much did it cost you?
£260.
Do you know what, though? If you get caught short, it's almost worth it, isn't it? If you've got a hire car. Blimey, he did it. In the van. What a dirty man.
But then he slept with it as well. That's the thing. Well, he must have slept with it, isn't there?
What a dirty, dirty man. I mean, that is so dirty.
It was just embarrassing because it's like, I thought they might have thought it was mine.
Well, of course they did. Oh, of course they did buy the... I'm not sure I buy the story about some bloke sleeping in the van. And then knocking on the door for a shower. You could have added the shower bit as a little bit of embellishment to make the other bit seem more realistic. I reckon you did it, Simon. You're a coprophile.
I've got a bet now. I'm quite excited.
Oh, do you know what? I've just reminded myself of a very funny gag that's in Goosebumps, right? It's this kid's film, right? And it's got Jack Black in, who I think is absolutely brilliant. And it's this story about this guy who writes scary stories for kids, and then all the monsters come alive, right? And there's two really funny characters in it that don't really get developed much. But it's this policeman, and there's a policewoman, but it's like her first day, right? And basically, they go around to Jack Black's house. Because someone's reported that he's been like, arguing with his daughter or something, right? And so Jack Black opens the door and the young lady police officer goes, "You're under arrest!" And the other guy goes, "It's her first day. Calm down. He's not done anything yet," right? And then there's a really funny gag. They hear a scream and they burst in to look. And he's got this big TV with a big sound system, right? And it's showing a film and there's someone screaming in the film. And he pauses it and he goes, "I spent a lot of money on this TV and surround sound. I can't help it if I'm an audiophile." And she pulls out her gun and goes, "That's disgusting." and the other guy goes, no, it just means he likes really high quality sound. I thought it was such a lovely gag. "I'm an audiophile. That's disgusting."
But that would go over all the kids' heads, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, exactly. It was kind of the one of not that many... there weren't too many winks to the mums and dads in that film, which I quite like. I don't like it when there's... I like a couple of winks, but that one I thought was very funny. So, flipping heck. OK, so are you in the place now? Surely this is the end of your adventures?
This is it.
I've got terrible hiccups. OK, well, why didn't you let him have a shower?
Well, I would have done if I know he needed it. If he hadn't been to the loo, obviously he would have needed a shower.
Yeah, it's...
Because he had no toilet roll either, that's the thing. He didn't wash his hands.
What was he? Was he like a homeless man?
He was a kind of... I would say he was about 19, 20. I felt quite sorry for him to begin with.
Well, I mean, I still feel sorry for him. No one wants to sleep in the back of vans that they've done poos in.
Well, he had a good night's sleep, though. Think of the people who were like, on the street.
Yeah,
had,
fair
like,
play,
luxury.
Actually. Yeah, fair play. He had a bit of luxury there, yeah. Well, Simon, thank you for that.
All right.
So, in fairness to the fella, it's Simon's fault for leaving the van unlocked. I wonder what Julia Hartley Brewer is tweeting now, because some of you lot aren't happy. I'd look, but I'm blocked. So I can't. She blocked me on Twitter. Oh, man. Dan's on the line. Evening, Dan.
Good evening.
Evening. What you got for us, boss?
I'm calling from a trim phone for a change.
Oh, I can do an impression of a trim phone.
No, it's a bit different. It's more... It's higher, you see. System.
I can just go higher, then. There's not... I can do that.
Not quite. It's higher. It's...
That's lower than what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Do it. Give me the note.
I'm lying on my side.
Give me the note. There. No, it's gone all ragga now.
It's all ruined, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've also, because you know you said we could call in and talk about anything.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Just picked a really, really satisfying bogey.
Oi! The thing is, right, about picking your nose, it's, I think it's the last great taboo. Because we all do it, and,
oh,
it,
yeah.
And it really is, it can be very satisfying in a way that, sex isn't, or you know, or doing well at work, or
yeah,
it's a real satisfaction that is unique and is incredible.
That you can do at work as well.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean, you have to be a bit more surreptitious. Cover the face with a hand, finger. Maybe not your first choice of finger, but
driving. Yeah. Driving yeah. For me is the real when the real work gets done.
Such things, entire episodes of Seinfeld have been based on.
There we go, you see. You
yeah.
See.
I also thought of, because I listened to your Danny Baker interview the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And I came up with a joke.
Do I need to do anything with this joke? Do I need to help you, or is it a one-man gag?
Maybe. Have you got a drum roll effect?
Yeah.
Okay. That'll do. What's the difference between Danny Baker and Ian Lee? 13 hours a week.
Yeah, I like that, Dan. That's good.
It's good and it's unfair.
It's a clever gag, and by that I mean it's not funny, but it's very, yeah. Very, very truthful.
Exactly.
Very, very truthful.
You know what? You two should do a dual show, a doubleheader.
Oh, do you know what? It would be an absolute thrill to do. I mean, what a thrill it would be, but... you know,
you wouldn't get a word in.
No, well, no. I thought he was very generous with the gaps he gave me. You know what? Years and years ago,
he was a little bit.
here comes another cup of tea. Thank you, Amy. Years and years ago, I sat in when he was on Radio One. I've just remembered this. I forgot this the other day because we mentioned that I phoned him up on GLR. I was also on his TV show on the Danny Baker TV series that he used to have, which, by the way, if anyone has copies of that, can you send them to me? Because it was brilliant. Me and my mate Conan went to see one being filmed. And at
That's
the end of the
one
show...
Ask Louis Barth about.
Sorry?
Louis Barth, he has almost certainly got a contact to have that.
Oh, really? What, but all
Danny
of the
Baker
episodes?
After all, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, Louis, I'll speak to him. And at the end of one of the shows, he said, right, we're a couple of minutes short, so what we want is, can someone come and play the drums? And I put my hand up. It's on YouTube. I put my hand up and went, yeah, I can. Of course I couldn't. I could play straight eights. And I went down and I ended the show by playing drums. If you watch it carefully, I whack myself in the eye. You can see it, right? And then afterwards, me and my mate got to go to the green room. And this was brilliant. We were students, right? And there was free beer. And we're talking to him. And I said, oh, Dan, is there any chance I could come and sit in on your radio show? He said, yeah, 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 of course you can. I'm on air tomorrow at Radio 1. Pop down. And I went down, and Radio 1 then was in this really weird... Well, this wasn't in Broadcasting House. It was some
weird...
It was
weird... in a bunker or something,
it was in
it?
A bunker. It was. It really was, right?
I have to apologise. I say I'm a nerd.
No, I know you are. This is partly why I can... I know you can fill in some of the blanks. It was in a bunker. I remember going in, and the security guard wouldn't let me in. And I said, well, Danny Baker said I could come in. He said, yeah, all right, whatever. And I said, no. And he rang through... And I got waved through, and I sat in there. I can't remember who else was in there. And I sat absolutely petrified in the studio while he was doing his Radio 1 show. And I remember he was talking about X-rated films. And he said, we got a fella in the studio. Ian, what was the first ever X-rated film you saw? And I said, it was Creepshow. But I don't think Creepshow was X-rated.
I have never heard of this film.
Shut up, man. Stephen King's Creepshow. It's got Ted Danson, who comes back as a zombie.
Zombie Ted Danson.
Ted Danson gets buried up to his neck in the sand by some mafiosa. So the tide comes in, he drowns, and then the mafiosa's at home having it large. There's a knock on the door. It's Zombie Ted Danson.
It sounds like he's being punished for doing Becker.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favourite Danny Baker's topic. Now, this is my earliest radio memory that I can think of at this moment in time.
Okay.
Radio 1. So quite short-lived. I would only have been about 11. And he was getting people to call into Radio 1 about what their cat's paws smelled like.
Oh, man alive.
Getting people to sniff their cat's paws and report on BBC Radio 1.
Hang on a second! Haminale. I don't know how you say your name right, but this is what gets me angry about Twitter. Can I read you a tweet, please, Dan?
Please do.
Finally tuning in to Ian Lee's talk radio show to hear two grown men doing presumably bird impressions. Jeez.
This discussion, I mean, I've got to assume that this person is too young.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I'm not an old man by any chance, any means. I'm, how old am I? I'm 35.
Prove it.
How can I prove I'm 35?
Yeah.
When I went to school...
Yeah.
Words and Pictures was on the telly.
Right, yeah.
And when I finished school... Chucklevision was on telly.
Yeah, okay, fine, you're 35.
I've covered the era there, haven't I?
It was Trim Phones, and Tim from America is tuning in. Tim lives in Hollywood, California. Tuned in to just in time to hear a dude. I like Tim. Tim's a good bloke. He does a really good podcast. To hear a dude say he just picked a really satisfying bogey. Classic Britain. Nice one. Yeah!
That's the beauty of hay fever season as well. My nostrils are drier than usual.
Exactly. Dan, I'm going to cut you off now, mate.
Good.
There we go. 08444991000. Hannah, G, Richie, stay there.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
And no doubt she'll be telling you why young people were too thick and ignorant to vote in the referendum. That's what she's tweeting. Thank God that the two mics are in next week, filling in for her. That's exciting, isn't it? I like the two mics. I think they are hilarious. They were making me laugh out loud so much the other night. I just think they're so funny. Even when they're talking about sports, I find them funny. And I hate, as you know, I hate sports, but they're brilliant. Anna!
Hello.
Hello, Anna.
You all right?
What's wrong? Has someone poked
you? Did.
What?
I'm high as a kite, really. I'm full of painkillers.
Oh, is someone? Have you shoved them up your nose? Has someone biffed you in the face? What's going on?
I felt awful.
What? Why?
I suffer from fibromyalgia, muscle pain, and it's really bad at the minute.
What brings it on?
Change of weather, depression.
Oh dear.
Anything.
It's been hot today, and it was so hot today, I considered changing from my jeans to a pair of shorts, and then I quickly came back to my senses.
All right.
Quickly came back to my senses, guys.
So you had your legs on show.
I didn't. I considered it.
Oh, you considered it?
I considered it, but I didn't do it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Anyway.
Yes.
I went to see Independence Day last Saturday.
Independence Day Resurrection.
Resurgence.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I knew it began with re. Independence Day Resurgence. What was it?
Resurgence.
This time, the first time it was just a trial. Now it's the real thing.
Yeah.
Any good?
Yeah, it was good. I guess where I saw it, in Kettering.
Oh, flipping it. The home of Lindsay Lohan.
Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, God. I watched one of Nigel's videos.
Yeah.
I wish I hadn't, because it really is quite upsetting. I mean, one of those pictures... What does his mum say about those pictures he's got on his bedroom wall?
I don't know, I can't remember.
Well, they're very raunchy.
Are they?
Yeah, they are a little bit. I mean, it's just pop stars these days, you know, but it's pictures of pop stars, and I just think, whoa...
I'm shocked.
Yeah, me too. So was it good? Because the film has had terrible reviews.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I don't think I would like to pay for it. But if it were, if it were on ITV2, like Independence Day often is, then I would probably watch it. I'd probably watch a little bit of it.
The only thing that annoyed me about that date, was I had someone in front of me with their phone on in the cinema, and someone kicking the back seat.
Kicking the back seat.
Yeah.
And what were they doing on the phone? Were they texting or talking?
They're on bloody Facebook.
Oh no, I would stand for neither of those things. And one of my boys is a kicker. He likes to swing his legs. When he gets a little bit anxious, he'll swing his legs to the point where he'll kick someone's chair. And I tell you what I don't like, right, is adults turning round and telling him to stop it. I wish they would turn to me and say, could you ask him to stop it, please? I find it a bit weird. There was one guy, right, when we went to the circus, I forgot about this. So he was kicking the chair, right, and fair enough. The time I said, do you mind stopping it? And I didn't really see this going on. And then my boy hadn't noticed this, right? He was kind of just off in his own world. And so then this guy went to my boy. He waved in front of his eyes and went, hello, like that. And I just went, son, stop kicking his chair. I'll sort this out. And I just thought, you horrible, don't... You're dealing with kids, and kids aren't normal. You know, they're not normal. No. If adults are normal, kids aren't normal. They function, their rules are different.
So kids are in their own world, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So do that was demeaning. But if someone, if I see him kicking someone's chair, we put a stop to that straight away. And if someone were kicking my chair, I'd turn and say, excuse me, do you mind? Is that a, thank you, mate. They did it again. I go, excuse me. I've just said, do you mind? They did it a third time. I biff them in the nose.
Yeah.
Because it was dark cinema, right, I'd have my fist ready. I always have my fist ready when I'm in the cinema anyway, because you just don't know if it's going to kick off, right? And I'd mentally picture him in my head, and I'd just stand up and I'd just biff him in the nose, and he'd be too shocked to do anything about it. He'd be out cold for the rest of the film. Out completely sparko for the rest of the film. I'd enjoy the film. And then I'd deal with the consequences afterwards. And there would be consequences for assaulting someone in a cinema and knocking them unconscious. There would be very, very serious consequences. So, I'd do
that. And nowadays, do you buy the popcorn or do you fill the pick-and-mix sweets up?
Normally I fill the pick and mix sweets up to the top. The boys like popcorn, I don't like it. But what I've started doing now is I take a rucksack and we go into the Waitrose next door.
Yeah.
And we load it up in the Waitrose. What are you going to do? Search my bags? Search this. And then when we're in the film, I quietly just get in there, get the Maltesers out, get a sandwich out. Okay, lovely, beautiful. Do that. That's what I do now.
Yeah.
Although, I think this is a law, right? If cinemas find you with food that is not bought from their premises, they can confiscate the food, and if you refuse to give them the food, they can throw you out.
Wowzers!
Yeah, that can actually happen. I don't know if it's law. I mean, it's just like the law of the Odeon or whatever it is.
Blimey.
Hannah, thank you very much for that. 0844 499 1000. I've been meaning to tell you all night. I've completely forgotten to tell you. And G and Richie, do you want to get that call? I'll come to you in a second. I had the most annoying thing tonight. I lost my wallet. We were going to go out and get some food after I'd interviewed the guy from the Young Rascals, and I'd lost my wallet. And I was looking. I took everything out of my bag. It wasn't there. I thought, maybe it's in the car. And I went to the car. It wasn't there. And I sat there thinking, right, where was the last place? Oh, no. And I remember I got to work really early. I got to work about 4 o'clock today. And I went to the Costa around the corner and I had a coffee. And I remember for some reason I had my wallet next to me on the seat. Next to me on the seat. And I remember thinking, oh, I should put that in my bag. I'll do it in a minute. And I thought, oh, no, I've left my wallet. I was furious. I had a tingly left arm. Which is a good thing. I think it means, doesn't it? I mean, you're imbued with special powers. And I was just thinking, oh, God, I bet I'm going to have to cancel all my bank cards. I've only got two. And I'll have to get a new driving licence. Oh, I had a note in there from my boy. Oh, there was 50 quid in there. Oh, no. I bet they've caned my card with thousands. Oh, nuts. I might as well go. It'll be shut. The Costa is shut, but I might as well go down there and have a look. And I went down there and it was shut. And I thought, oh, no. And I saw a cleaner in there. I was banging on the window. And this guy went, it was shut. I said, oh, I've lost my wallet. And he went, oh, I don't know anything.
Oh, hang on. What was the name? I told him my name. Ian Lee. I don't know. And he went, oh, yeah, we got it. I'll give it to you. And he had it. They had the wallet. Flipping heck. And these were foreign people. These were people from, I'm imagining, from Europe. These were Europeans. They had my wallet. He gave it to me. There were three of them. I took out 20 quid, right, to give him because I thought, you know, fair play. That was there. There was 50 quid in there. That was in there. Everything was in there. I took out 20 quid. I thought, that's a fair reward. Tenner's a bit. And there's three of them. Tenner for... And he went, he wouldn't accept it. And I said, oh, no, mate, I insist, seriously, this is blinding what you've done. He said, no, we won't take it. How cool is that? We're going to kick those guys out of the country soon. Some of you have voted to kick those guys out of the country. Do you know what I mean? Flipping heck. Anyway, thank you to the staff at Costa around the corner from us, because that was absolutely blinding. Yeah, did someone tweet that to Julie Hartley Brewer? I would, but she's blocked me. The guys that some people have voted to kick out, they handed my wallet back and wouldn't accept a reward for it. Guys. 0844 499 1000. G, Richie, you'll be next, then G, and then Ross. Beautiful.
The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
And the thing is, Creepshow wasn't an X-rated. It was like a 15, I think. And as I said it, I thought, I don't think it was X-rated. Anyway, Richie!
Hip, hip, hip.
Hip, hip, hip.
Oh, blimey. Ian, you're sounding spot on tonight.
Thank you very much. And you're sounding knackered and past it. What's going on with you, man?
It's been a long day.
Yeah.
Ian, I've been doing some homework.
Oh, yeah. Go on. Yeah, I like that.
And I've got a couple of things. Am I allowed to run through them before you cut me off?
Well, I
never have particularly too much. Sorry, and I don't mean to interrupt.
Are you drunk? Sorry, are you drunk?
No, not really. No.
Well, no, no.
I've had a couple.
There we go. No, not you're nicely lit.
Drunk.
You're drunk. Nicely lit. Okay. Well, go on then, Richie. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Right. Okay. So I was sat. I had an afternoon off.
Yeah.
And I was watching a bit of telly.
Yeah.
And I ran past a program. And the program was about cats.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
About cats that make you laugh.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is very strange. Where's all this going? And it drew me in. And then I saw the, when they run all the names up. About the people that are involved in the program.
Yes, yes, the credits, yes.
Yeah, and the guy that was doing the talkover.
Yes,
was a guy called Mr. Ian Lee.
We all know that cats are hilarious little creatures, and luckily for us, sometimes they do those things in front of a camera. Well, why don't you stay tuned as we watch cats that make you laugh out loud? Yeah, it's me.
That's bang on. You've got it.
It's me. It's my voice. Here's the thing. Right? We're doing a series of it now. 10 episodes. Right?
Yeah.
And someone once had a pop at me saying, "Oh, are you happy doing that rubbish program?" I said, "Well, the last series paid my mortgage for 2 years." So, yes, I'm very happy. And I genuinely think it's a funny programme, right?
It's actually funny.
It's very, very funny.
About it.
Here's the thing, right? So we do an episode a week, and there are 10 episodes. There are two more to go in this series that I've got to do the voiceover for. And what I go and sit with a bloke called Ben, who produces it, and I sit in a really hot booth, and I take my shoes off, and I read the script. It takes 2 hours to do the show, right?
Blimey.
I know. There's a lot of verbiage in there. I was due to do one tomorrow, right? And Ben texted me today saying, "A bit of bad news, we've lost the last two episodes." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, the company that's got them on their computer has deleted their computer. We haven't got any more. And the next one is going to be penguins that make you laugh out loud. But it's a joy. I think it's a very funny programme, and the people that make it are a delight. And I absolutely... It's torturous doing a voiceover for a program. You're in this hot booth. You can't have air conditioning.
I can imagine.
Because the air conditioning will be picked up by the microphone. So it's hot and you're sweaty and there's only so many ways you can go, Have a look at this cat. This is Felix from the good old United States of A. His owner, Mary, couldn't believe it when she turned. And, it
feeds my children, and I think it's a very funny programme. And lots of people like it.
It's great. I love that.
Most successful programme on Australian TV last year. Fact. It got more viewers than anything else did in Australia last year. How nuts is that?
Tell me about it. I don't know how I got drawn.
You say you're only a little bit. You've only had a couple. Yes.
Am I drawn or droon?
You droon.
I've got a couple more things, but I think there's one more thing I want to just quickly chat about.
Yes, boss.
You did a podcast some time ago of the silent presenter.
Oh, yeah.
Can we have, please, another silent presenter? And can I propose this for you?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Will you let it play out just for a moment?
What?
Please. Okay, here it comes. Okay, just hold on.
What?
I've had a steering wheel in my hand for the last 100 years, I think.
What is this?
I can drive pretty good. I can't walk, but I can sure drive. My name is Millard Fowler. I'm 102 years old. I was born the first day of May in 1913.
What the hell is this?
I remember when radio first showed up. I thought that was the darndest thing that ever happened. We didn't have weather reports.
What is he doing? Where is he going?
We didn't have much relation to this part of the world.
Where have you gone, Richie?
Weather report now, he's probably 300 miles from where we are. Boy City, Oklahoma, right in the middle of it.
That was him only after a couple. What was that? I mean, it sounded great, but I couldn't really hear it. G.
Hello.
Hello.
Why do people insist on pitching you their ideas when they ring?
Could you come off speakerphone so we can hear you?
I'm not on speakerphone.
Well, what are you? What, could you come near your? Could you put your mouth near your telephone then?
If I put my mouth any nearer my telephone, I might actually be tapped on your ear.
Well, then, may I respectfully suggest you get a decent telephone?
I've got a decent telephone. May I respectfully suggest that your researcher actually give me a proper line?
May I respectfully suggest a couple of things?
Of course.
Firstly, that's my producer you spoke to, not researcher.
Oh, I must apologise. They're all the same to me.
What is your problem, dude? Your phone line...
You
shut your mouth. Your phone line is rubbish. We've put you through on a normal line.
Your producer has given me this line.
I can't understand what you're saying. All I'm picking up is heavy attitude from a bit of a knob. You're yay close to getting cut off.
Respectfully.
Why is everyone drunk? What is going on? This is the second night in a row we've had a load of drunks calling in, rambling, slurring their words, phoning up on pony phones that have got terrible, terrible lines, and making up nonsense about how radio shows work and how we give some people good lines and some people bad lines.
Ian, it's a bad line.
Yeah, I know, and you blamed it on my producer.
No,
You blamed it on your producer.
No, you did, you irritating drunk tit.
I have never touched a drop of alcohol in my
God,
life.
God, this is what you're like, clean and sober. That's terrifying. Where does the attitude come from?
How about I hang up right now?
Good idea.
Your producer,
yeah, that,
to give me a proper line.
That's what we'll do, yeah. You hang up and we'll call you straight back. Go on.
Thanks.
No, not a problem. You hang up, mate, and we'll call you straight back.
Thanks. I'm sure you will.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Here, I'll help. Don't phone him back. What a winker. What was that about? Jeez. I mean, late night radio, guys. It's finally taking shape. Russ.
Hello.
Come on, Russ. I'm depending on you now, mate. Lauren, we'll come to you in a minute. Yeah, I'm depending on you, Russ. Come on.
No, I'm not drunk, mate, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
I couldn't work out who he sounded. He sounded like the teacher off Snoopy.
I just don't like... don't phone up and have a go at my team. Have a go at me. More than welcome to have a go at me. Of course you are.
Yeah.
But don't have a go at my... You did sound like the teacher from Snoopy. I've just got the reference. You're absolutely spot on. Hang on a second. G, we're going to call you back in a minute, mate. Yeah, G?
Yeah, G? Yeah?
We're going to call you back in a...
We're going to call you back in
a... There we go, you're flipping it.
Bloody hell, fire.
Tell me about it. What an obnoxious person. Anyway.
I've tagged you in a post on the Talk Radio listeners group of one of Nigel's classic clips that you might enjoy.
Oh, God, I find Nigel strangely disturbing. Oh, I can see it. Here we go. Nigel from Maidstone as Rambo. I don't know if the world's ready for that yet.
It's a beauty.
Oh, dearie. Oh, I don't know if you've seen, Russ, I've got a YouTube channel. And I've started putting up clips from the show on the YouTube channel. They go on the Talk Radio page as well, but I put them on here. And there was a drunk woman last night who called in.
I missed that. Yeah, I've seen that. I will watch it.
It's incredible. Listen, here's the thing, right? When I was drunk, when I used to be drunk, right, I would happily admit I was drunk. You're drunk. Yeah, I am. I love it. If you're drunk, just say, yeah, I'm drunk. And then we'll get on a lot better. Do you know what I mean? But don't phone again. Just don't phone up and have a go at the team. Have a go at me. I can take it. I've got a big microphone here. And I can take it. Don't phone up and have a go at the team. That's just unpleasant and rude. And gee, was an unpleasant person.
Especially to Ed and Cass.
Yeah. Well, Ed doesn't work here anymore.
Really?
He got Murdoch'd off. Part of the EU referendum was we can kick them all out now, and we kicked him out.
No, I don't know.
Murdoch came in. You know Murdoch's taken over. First day, he came in and went, are you an Aussie or a Kiwi? And Ed went, I'm a Kiwi, sir. Get the flip out of here. And he, boom, he was out straight away. Did the same to Kath. Lady, you're not a producer. And she got taken off for 2 days, but she's got she got the union and it won't last. Anyway, Russ.
Can't fault Kath. She's a fine lady on the phone. She answers the phone. Very, very pleasant.
All right, calm down.
I'm only complimenting her. A couple of things. First of all, shorts, mate.
Yes.
Shorts. Oh. I wear my shorts from spring until last year. It was November.
Oh, man. You're one of them. That's just wrong.
Yeah, I like the little shorts, mate. You can't beat it. I got out of my shorts and my slippers.
I like slippers. Right. Oh, no, I won't go out in public in shorts. That doesn't happen.
No. I love a pair of shorts, mate. Let everything breathe. I heard your interview earlier with Miranda Sawyer.
Miranda Sawyer, yes.
I didn't know who she was, to be honest, until I Googled her. Then I recognised her. I used to love Smash Hits, mate.
I never read Smash Hits.
Oh, I used to love it, mate. and used to get the lyrics to the songs, which was always helpful.
But well, you would have been about 20 when Smash Hits came out.
No. No. I was probably about 10 when I first started buying it. And I used to pin all the pictures on the wall of the nice female pop singers.
Oh, dear God.
Nothing like Nigel from Maidstone, yeah. Mate. I wasn't that lucky. We weren't that lucky in those days.
Looking magazine, wasn't it? And they would have, like, cartoon stories of, like, Adam Ant and stuff and Simon Le Bon.
Well, I inherited a huge collection of those off my older sister, and that was good. Looking was... there's actually a Facebook, like, tribute page to Looking, if anybody's interested. But, I used to love that. That was it. It must have... gone out of fashion, I suppose.
That would have ended by the late 80s. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, with Metal Mickey and Daley Thompson and people like that. Random characters.
Yeah. Russ, I've got to move on. You have one more thing?
No, that was it. Thanks for your time.
Russ, always a pleasure, mate. Thank you. I've just moved on because I'm late for an ad and I've got to squeeze in two more calls after this.
Uncut, after-hours conversation for the up-all-night generation. Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
It's this last hour. Now we've got rid of Straight to Air. We're getting loads more calls, which is brilliant. And we're getting loads more drunk people. Which I think is also brilliant. I'm a big fan of them. Lauren's on the line. Good evening, Lauren.
Hi, Ian Lee.
Hello, Lauren. Are you in Singapore?
Yes, I am.
What are you doing over there?
I live here. I work here. It's very early in the morning for me, so I'm definitely not drunk because I'm on my way to work.
Well, that's a disappointment because I thought we could have done the whole rest of the show with
losers. So.
Never mind. What you got for us?
I just wanted to tell you something that happened to me the other day because it's very poignant, especially you just having a rant at that last caller.
Yeah.
I spoke to you about 12 years ago and put out a question on LBC days.
Okay, blimey, yes. That was very early LBC days.
Mixtapes.
About what?
Yeah, about mixtapes, making mixtapes for, like, a significant other and the opinions of that.
Oh, mixtapes,
anyway,
yes.
That's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Blimey.
And, then LBC days ended, and I went travelling, and I downloaded every single podcast of your Absolute Show.
Wow, blimey.
Because I couldn't get it in normal
stalker
hours.
Stalker alert,
right?
Guys.
Me and Lee fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And then I was running the other day, and I'm a little bit slow on the uptake when it comes to talk radio, because I don't live in the country, and I don't get the updates and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I genuinely had a moment where I was listening to a podcast of your show, and you know when you haven't seen someone in the films when people haven't seen each other for a long time,
yeah.
They see them and then they do that kind of like face touching thing and then like look deep into their eyes to make sure it's definitely them.
Yeah.
I did my version of that listening to your podcast because I refused to believe that it was a new podcast from Ian Lee until you said something like up to date and current and it happened to be about the EU and then I believed it. And now I'm happy that you're back.
Oh, I'd vanished off your radar for, what, about 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I was devastated.
Wowzers, I'm sorry about that. These things, this is the weird thing. When you get the boot from a radio station, or they don't renew your contract, or they sack you or stuff, it's like you never existed, and no one is ever allowed to mention you on air or off air. Again, sometimes that rule gets bended a bit, but I always think that if someone leaves a radio station, for whatever reason, unless they've been, like, noncing or something, but if they didn't get their contract renewed or something, I always think as a courtesy, the person who takes that slot should say, look, I'm replacing such and such, they did it for a few years, I'm doing it now, I hope we can get on. Just to acknowledge to the listener that person that's been in their house every morning or every evening or whatever for the last 2, 3, 4 years has gone. Because otherwise, for the next 6 months, the people on the switchboard will get phone calls going, what happened to such and such? Is he coming back? And I just think it's good manners.
Haters
going to
hate, Ian.
Haters going to hate. What's Singapore? Have I been to Singapore? Is Singapore where you stop over on the way to Australia?
Yeah, you probably have been here and haven't remembered it because it's dull as dishwater.
I went there. I went to Australia once for a job and I stopped off in Singapore, and I had 8 hours in Singapore, and my brother-in-law had some friends there, and they met me and took me out for some food. And you get those, it was like this, I mean, I got this weird ice drink in a market or something.
Yeah.
Do you know the market? Do you know the ice drink market? I got a drink from there.
The Hawker Centres.
Yeah, got it from
there. I'm also really pleased to hear that Pradeep's back. And I was just going to ask, what about Barry? Is there any chance we can get Barry back?
Barry's been on from time. He's been on a few times.
Has he?
Yeah, Barry's. You know, Barry does a podcast with a bloke called Angelos.
I do.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So Barry's got, now he's got Angelos. He's been on the telly more recently than me. Oh, Angelos this, Angelos that. Oh, I love Angelos. Oh, I want to touch Angelos's bottom. All of this stuff. So Barry calls him from time to time, and Angelos calls him from time to time as well. But we try not to encourage it.
Well, I'm not a stalker, but I definitely feel whole again. So thank you very much,
Lauren. It's great to have you listening, man. And you, anytime you want to get in touch with us from Singapore, we would. Here we go. This is what we're going to do. I bestow upon thee, Lauren. You are the official Ian Lee. She's gone. She's gone. No, she's never going to find out what she was going to be. Don't call her back. It's for the best. I was about to make a. I was about to perhaps give her more than she deserved. Actually. Luke, good evening, Luke.
Hip, hip, hip.
Hip, hip, hip.
How are you going on?
I'm going on very, very well. Seen any pumas recently?
No, but I'm just, I don't see that lynx. It's escaped from that zoo.
Yeah, I heard that story and I thought, is it anywhere near you?
No.
You'll probably see it then, won't you?
God.
You will.
Yeah, but like I say, mate, because it's very strange. Like, last night was very strange.
Yes.
Because I kept getting a car coming down and then shooting off and then coming down. And like, it was dead weird. It's one of them weird nights again.
Yeah.
So, a couple of things, mate. I feel sorry for you and your team getting that abuse.
I don't mind if they abuse me, right? I love it. I don't love it. On air, right, I can take it and I can deal with it, and actually I think it makes really good radio. Yeah, I just think it's bad manners to have a go at someone who you don't even know what job they do, and you're accusing them of something that's blatantly untrue, deliberately putting you through on a bad line. I just think it's bad manners.
When I phoned up and I spoke to a lovely lady, she sounded a bit petrified.
That would have been Catherine, and yeah, she is petrified of you. She's worried that you're a sex pest.
No, I'm not like that.
You say that. You all of your pictures of people's faces have instead of eyes, they have Kate Garraway's boobs.
Yeah, that's in the past.
That's all done now, is it?
Yeah, the reason why I'm phoning up as well, mate. A couple of films. I don't know how you like your films. I don't know if you've ever seen these two films before. It's a couple of years old. One called Control.
Now that rings a bell. Oh, is that's the Joy Division film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Started Joy Division and ended up as New Order.
It's a good film. I don't even like Joy Division or New Order. What band did New Order become?
They were like Joy Division, yeah. And then New Order.
Okay, complete this sentence. Joy Division became New Order, became...
Oh, no, you got me...
Electronic.
Yeah, that's it.
Electronic, wasn't it?
Electronic.
Because
Peter Hook, he was in a few bands, one called Renegade.
Who was Peter Hook married to?
The lady passed away a few
Carolina
days ago.
Carolina Hearn, yeah, he was married to... Yeah. It's Hookie and the Boys. Let's go over to Hookie and the Boys. Yeah, Mrs. Merton.
And the other film, it's called I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell. It's a comedy.
Well, it sounds hilarious.
It is. It's special. You need to watch it.
Who's in it?
I've never heard of them before, but it's like an American one.
Yeah.
Go out on a like a stag do,
yeah,
and it all goes all wrong,
yeah.
But you need to watch it, especially when the bloke goes to the toilet. It is hilarious.
When the bloke goes to the toilet. All right,
yeah.
Luke. But go on.
It's in the end they get married, but you need to watch it. You will laugh your head off.
Luke, I probably will never watch that, but thank you very much indeed. It sounds absolutely awful. Let's give him one last chance, shall we? G.
You just called me a sex pack.
Can't... Again, mate, it's your phone.
No, it's not my phone.
Well, it is your phone. It sounds to me like you're on Bluetooth or speaker.
I'm not on Bluetooth. I'm not on speaker.
You're on your high horse.
You just simply called me a sex pest.
No, I didn't call you a sex pest.
You did. You said that the people that call in that are drunk are sex pests.
Okay. I didn't. I was referring to Luke as a sex pest.
Oh, no.
Mate, it sounds like you phoned in from a shoe. I can't hear anything you're saying, and I don't like your attitude. I'll let you call in tomorrow, OK? Bye-bye. What a meme, really. Well, that was a show. Thank you, Emma. Thank you, Catherine. And that seemed to fly by tonight, to be honest. That flew by. Two mics are up next. We're back tomorrow at 10, or tonight at 10. Ta-ta.
Talk radio. Intelligent, organic entertainment.
Talk radio.
We'll get you talking.